Okay, thank you very much. It's May 15th, 2017, and this is our Monday night weekly call. And seems like we got a good crowd in here tonight. I'll start off with a scripture reading, and then we'll move on to some other stuff. I don't know if Brent's here. John will not be with us tonight. He wasn't feeling good, so I'm going to run the meeting with put Robert's help and whoever else is out there to help me. So I'm going to cut right to the chase here with a reading out of chapter 12 of Revelations. And we'll start that now. And a great sign appeared in heaven, and a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. And being with child, she cried, travailing in birth, and it was pain to be delivered. And there was seen another sign in the heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his head 7 diadems, and his tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, who was ready to be delivered, that when she should be delivered, he might devour her son. And she brought forth a man-child, who was to rule all nations, with an iron rod, and her son was taken up to God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared by God, that they should feed her 1,260 days. And there was a great battle in heaven. Michael with his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels, and they prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And that great dragon was cast out, and that old serpent who was called the devil and Satan, who seduced the whole world, and he was cast to earth, and it was his angels were thrown down with him. And I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ, because the accuser of our brethren is cast forth, who accused them before God day and night. And they overcame him by blood of the Lamb, and by the word of testimony, and they loved not their lives unto death. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you that dwell therein. Woe to you, the earth and the sea, because the devil is come unto you, and having great wrath, knowing that he had but a short time. And when the dragon saw that he was cast unto earth, he persecuted the woman who brought forth the man-child. And they were given to the woman 2 wings and a great eagle, that she might fly into the desert and unto her place, where she is nervous for a time and a time and a half times from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast out his mouth after the woman water as it were a river, that he might cause her to be carried away by the river. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the river, which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was angry against the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her seed, who kept the commandments of God and who have the testimony of Jesus Christ. And he stood upon the sands of the sea. And that's chapter 12 of Revelations, or Apocalypse. Some books call it Apocalypse. Okay, thank you. So, anyway, I chose that particular reading for a reason. And because there's things going on right now that are somewhat prophetic, and I don't want to get into a bunch of religious stuff, but I just want to call everybody's attention to the fact that there are signs in the sky right now that reveal this particular passage in the Bible. And that Virgo and the woman with the stars, with the 12 stars on her head, that you say, oh, that was Christ, that was the birth of Christ. Well, right now we're moving into a time that has never happened in the sky with Jupiter and Virgo. Jupiter went in retrograde and is in Virgo. And Jupiter has been moving back and forth in the belly of Virgo, the Virgin. And this is happening. If you look up right now, you'll see Jupiter, and it's moving back and forth in the belly of Virgo. And it's going to do that for 42 weeks, which just so happens to be the length of gestation of a human child. And by the 23rd of September, he's going to come out, going to be born. out of there. So, you know, in the Bible, it says that God placed the stars and the moon and the planets for seasons and for signs. And so anybody that is Christian that believes in the Bible, here's a sign that you should be aware of. I'm not going to tell you how to interpret it or anything else. You know, no, many Christians and, you know, denominations, they're always saying no man knows the day nor the hour. And that's true. No man does know the day or the hour. But this thing that's coming up now happens to be coming in the Jewish year of the Feast of Trumpets. Now, the Feast of Trumpets is a feast that was celebrated for many, many years, thousands of years. And that's the feast that no man knows the day nor the hour. When they asked Christ, when is he coming? And he said, no man knows the day nor the hour. I think he was talking about that feast where they looked for the new moon. And it took two people to see the new moon. And until two people could verify it, they couldn't declare the new moon. And so the Jews have been calling that feast the feast that no man knows the day nor the hour. Because that's what it was. And so that makes a whole lot of sense now that we're in these times and living it. Now, that doesn't mean it's the day or the hour, but you should know the season that we're living in. Now, I don't know that anything's going to happen special on September 23rd, because that's when Jupiter comes out of retrograde and is born. But I would certainly look for great things to be going on in the world. There's great things going on right now. There's wars and rumors of wars and all kinds of things. So we need to get busy, and we need to be where we think we should be. And so for me, as a Christian, this is a great sign for me. And that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to get into it. You need to do your own research. You know, I'm just a watcher, and I'm bringing you the word. And I think this is a very significant thing for anybody of faith to look at. You can look right up in the sky. It's there. You can't make this stuff up. And it's never happened before. This constellation with the 12 stars and Jupiter in retrograde being in the womb of Virgo for 42 weeks has never happened in all of recorded history. The Chinese kept records for 4,000 years. The astronomers today can back up the sky charts and determine the paths of the stars and the planets, and they know it's never happened before, and they also know it's never going to happen again in the foreseeable future. So that's a significant scientific thing that connects with Scripture, and you should be aware of that, because we didn't put those planets up there, and we didn't make those signs. God did. You need to be aware of them, and you need to have this information as you go through and do what we're doing. It's an exciting time, and we need to get busy. And so we have lots of stuff going on, and we're kind of reaching a climax, and yet we don't want to drop the ball because there's so much to do. You know, right now we have so many people and so many cases that are so close, and we need to carry this stuff forward. We have a president that needs help. He doesn't know everything. He's doing the best he can. He's up there. Got a lot of evil people around him. Our paperwork has gone to him. We know that. He's got a lot of people in his ears. But if we don't bring the bottom up, and we are the bottom up, and we are a force to be reckoned with if we get together and we do the right thing, I think it's a chance for at least us here in America to do the right thing and to get into the place where we want to be in relationship to the rest of the world. How it ends up, I have no idea. You know, it doesn't, you know, I don't know. I don't pretend to know the times or the seasons or anything like that completely. I just know that there's a lot of signs that say we don't have a lot of time left to get this thing straightened out and to get us to where we want and where we need to be. You know, so we got lots of paper to file, lots of new things, lots of cases that we want to focus in on. That are cases that are good enough that people have done almost all the work for us. All we need to do is come in as the common law grand jury and present it. You know, another good case that was brought up recently that I would like to look into, if they would like us to, is this Mike Gill, who's been just slamming the judges and he's got so much evidence but. He just doesn't quite understand the common law enough to really bring this forward. He needs a common law grand jury. He needs us to bring this stuff in order to bring it to fruition. I mean, he's got stuff that goes all the way up into the FBI and the White House, and he's got all the evidence, and he's been working on it. You can go watch his videos on Something New Hampshire. Wait a minute here. I can tell it what it is in a minute here. Anyway, he's from New Hampshire, and he's just a guy that started out in New Hampshire, and he was a journalist, and he ran some businesses, and he ran into trouble, and they offered him, I don't know, $50 million to shut his mouth, but they wanted all kinds of immunities, and he refused to do it. So now, you know, they tried to kill him three times. They haven't succeeded, but you know what? He's way out there and he needs help now. And we need to really look at these cases and the cases out west, what's going on. We need to push these into a investigation where they give us a prosecutor that will, like a private attorney general or a prosecutor just for these cases. Because they can't be trusted to who's in there, because they're all bought and paid for, and we have the evidence. So that being said, you know, in order for us to file these papers and get these people's attention and to get our paperwork in there, it's going to require a massive amount of paperwork in the next couple of weeks. So I go to that next sticky subject, which is money. You know, $5 a month would be nice from everybody, because we could really get moving if we could get $5 a month from everybody. That would take care of every last piece of paper that we need to file. If we could get all of our members to give us $5 a month, we could push this thing. We could fast track it, because unfortunately, that's what it takes. It costs money to file this stuff. You know, we need people going through it, filtering it, making it so it goes on the paperwork, but we also have to fax it. We also have to pay fees. You know, nothing's for free today. And $5, my goodness, you go to Dunkin' Donuts and you spend $5, $6, $7 on just getting a coffee and a sandwich. So, you know, once a month, skip that. Stay home and make your own eggs and give the $5 a month so we can save the nation and get our word out. We have a lot of good stuff and a lot of good words, but it takes media and money. We have NLA News that needs to come off the ground, but it needs help. It needs media. It needs money. It needs people to spend time in doing it, and time is money. And so the more money that we can amass, the more time we can spend, and the more things we'll get out. So it's not a whole lot to ask for if just $5 a month from every person would be the prescription that saves us, that actually makes us effective. So at any rate, that's my rant. That's where I'm at. I'm gonna unmute everybody for a minute. Maybe I'll open the queue up, but let me just, I don't know if Brent is here. I know Robert is, but let me
Brent
unmute.
Brent is here. However, there's a couple of announcements and questions.
Okay, so Jan is not here, so I'm going to let you go ahead and do that, Robert. I assume you know what those are, because I don't.
Yes, I have the questions for you.
Okay, so I'm gonna shut up, and I'm going to let you do that, okay?
Well, so these are very simple to answer. There's two questions, and I could answer them in three words.
Okay.
It says, if the vice president is president of the Senate, how can the president of the United States have the power to fill vacancies in the Senate? Well, he doesn't.
Okay.
Right?
That's two words. He doesn't. Okay.
No, he can fill vacancies in other agencies, but the states fill the vacancies for the
Senate
and Congress. I mean, that's if one of them is out or has been chosen for another position, the state replaces him.
And that's where and they come from, the state. That makes sense.
Yeah, right. So the second part here is, if Obama's father wasn't a citizen, how did he become president for two terms? Well, the simple answer is fraud. And he got away with it for two terms because of we the people not knowing the Constitution and not knowing that he wasn't eligible to be president. And it's another good reminder how we all need to take the Constitution course so that we know what the Constitution says and know when something is wrong.
Right.
But that's the simple answer is fraud. Am I right?
This is Brent. I think you're fundamentally right.
Yeah, well, that's the only two questions that I have. Now, I have the update for out here in the West, and very simply, you know, last week I talked about how Ammon was beaten and handcuffed in a 3x3 cage for 13 hours, and the sheriff had to send in a SWAT team in full tactical gear to rescue him. Well, it seems the sheriff is not as knowledgeable as she needs to be either. Now, she came out to do an investigation, and after the investigation, she came and told the supporters that, well, you know, that prison is a corporation. And I don't have any jurisdiction over a corporation, so there's nothing I can do. And they said, well, you know, he was tortured. They said, well, torture is legal. So somebody needs to educate that sheriff. I mean, she might have been fantastic in saving him, but she needs to know that her job is, you know, she has jurisdiction over corporations and everybody else in her county. She's the highest ranking law enforcement officer in her county. So somebody has filled her full of BS and she's believed it. So anyway, then it being a private run prison, they have a board of directors that flew out from somewhere in the South, or I think it was, and they're going to investigate the abuse. And so they came to the prison, they gathered up all the Bundy people. Not just the Bundys, but the other guys that were in prison with them. And they told them, okay, we're taking you to a meeting with the attorneys. So they all gathered in the chapel, prison chapel. None of their attorneys were there, just attorneys for the board of directors. Well, the board of directors told them, you know, we want to investigate this and end this abuse and everything. We want to know what it's all about and everything. We want to get to the bottom of it. And they said, we want to take you each individually into a room for questioning. Well, these ranchers and whatnot, they're a little smarter than the average Joe when it comes to this kind of thing. They said, no, we understand what you're doing. You're the board of directors, and you're the fox guarding the hen house type of thing. Now, you you want to find a way to get yourself out of trouble, and we're not talking to you. The only way we're going to talk to you is if our attorneys are all here and the sheriff of Nye County is here. Otherwise, we're not speaking. Well, they took them all back to their cells, and I guess they just left. They found out they weren't going to get what they wanted. And we still got supporters hanging out there. We've got we've also got trolls and informants amongst them. We probably know two or three of them, but the supporters are not willing to listen. But Kelly Stewart was there. And she's recognized as one of the leaders. And she suddenly had a problem with her computer, a virus or something. She needed to take it in and get help getting rid of the virus. Well, then when it came time for her to come back home, she pulled over to a motel at 11 p.m. on the night that she left, so get a good night's sleep. And lo and behold, somebody breaks into her car and steals her iPad and laptop out of the car. Well, I do believe that FBI are probably having a good time looking at all the pictures that she has on there. I mean, with all the trolls and the informants amongst the supporters out there, I'm sure they knew exactly where she would be, or at least what direction she'd be going. They'd be able to, and what she was driving, and so I imagine they followed. And thank the heavens for their good luck that she pulled over and went in the motel without her laptop. My opinion, but it seems like the dots connect. The supporters, now they went into town and they bought some materials and they built a 3x3 cell out there across from the prison, so that everybody coming into the prison, everybody leaving the prison would see the cell as a reminder of the abuse of Ammon. And these guys are volunteering to be locked up in there with their hands handcuffed behind their backs for as long as they can stay in there. And they're using it to raise money through sponsorship. In just 4 or 5 days, they done raised over $20,000. And it goes toward Ammon's legal funds. So, got a bunch of good supporters right along with the informants. They've got some good people there, too. But that's all that's going on right now. Just waiting on the retrial, which will be next month. And so probably won't be too much happening until that time. But that's where we're at right now.
Okay, I have another announcement to make. Robert.
Okay.
We have on the call tonight, we have a fellow named Mike Gill. I don't know, most of the people here may not know who he is. Mike's been doing a single-handed, lion-hearted fight against the government. They've tried to kill him two or three times. He wants to get his word out. We would love to take up his case and file some paperwork on his behalf as the common law grand jury. You know, he's here. I want him to plug what he's got and introduce you guys to what he's doing because he needs the word out. They're looking to pick him up for contempt. Look at, they offered him like $50 million and he refused. So you know what that's all about. And if we can find him, I'd like to unmute him. I think he's a 603 number.
603. Yes, I'm looking. I knew he was supposed to be here.
Yeah, he's here. And what I would like him to get on and give him some time to talk. And then, maybe tomorrow he can get a hold of Jan and John and myself and we could get into some nitty-gritty. But for now, I want him to get his word out. He needs, he needs court observers. He needs people to do affidavits. And it would be nice to get some of his stuff on our paperwork and file it on in the court with him to put pressure on the federal court. But
well,
I don't want to talk
Here's a 603-703-2163.
I don't know if that's him, but unmute it and see if it's him. I guess I could open the queue up and tell him. Well, how do you get in the queue? You dial star, what is it, six? I don't
star
remember.
Six.
Star six. Look, if I open the queue, and Gil, if you're in there, you dial star six, you should
well,
get, I think, a one. You should, don't anybody else go in the queue now. We want Mike Gill to get into the queue. Mike, if you're there, dial on your phone star six and then one so that you can be unmuted. Because unless I can find you, I got a lot of callers on this screen. I could have trouble finding you. We did have a 603. 603-819. Okay, let me.
Okay,
hello,
it's not
can you hear
one.
Me?
I can hear you.
Okay, you're unmuted. Mike, you got the floor. You're here at National Liberty Alliance on our national Monday night call. I kind of introduced you, but I probably didn't do a good job. You know what I mean? This is.
I'll fill them in.
Yeah, you please do. I'll be quiet now. You go ahead.
Okay. The organization I put together is called State of Corruption. And then I put NH as in New Hampshire. But my intention is to put an organization in each state. Now, what I found in New Hampshire, I've been doing for 10 years. For years, I've been telling people the corruption and how it works, and they never believed it. Well, now they're starting to. And now they're starting to in volumes of people. My videos are getting 3 and 4 million views now. Now, really what I found and what I'm fighting, I know as far as fighting in court, what I'm telling you is that there's an organization within the state of New Hampshire. And what it did was it was organized pretty much from three law firms. At one time there was four. These lawyers become judges, become politicians. And what they did was there was a friendly government for corruption. And that's why, like, insurers would come in here. That's Bill Shaheen, who owns Shaheen and Gordon Law Firm, whose wife is Senator Shaheen. What they also do is they protect the drug dealers. And I'm massive drug dealers. New Hampshire is ground zero. And that's according to the DEA per capita. Manchester, New Hampshire, the largest city we have, per capita has the highest crime rate. Worse than Detroit. So what I'm telling you and what I'm exposing is there's a network and an umbrella of corruption. They own judges. A lot of the judges they own, you'll see that comes out of the AG's office, which is generally the cover team within a state. Now, the people that I'm dealing with, they wouldn't go after the drug dealers. I put them on my electronic billboards for my businesses. I've showed them and I told them what Dick Aganos, Andy Cruz, Griner, what they do is they own the largest car dealership in New England. They're laundering the money. They own the Elliott Hospital. Walker, who I'm in court with, is the lawyer for the Catholic Medical Center. Kakavas, the previous U.S. attorney, he's the same lawyer, but for Dartmouth. These fentanyl and drugs are killing people. They're quite literally coming out of the hospitals. Now, these judges know this. And they're protecting him. Judge Delker in here, he's had the drug dealers, and then he had Walker. Judge Francois in the same courthouse put me in jail two times, and the second time they killed me. I turned down $50 million, not once, a dozen times. And what I'm telling people is, I put it out there, the video is called The List. It gives you the $50 million and tells you who they want releases for. They wanted, the IRS wanted a release. The Department of Revenue wanted a lease. Bill Shaheen wanted a lease. The banking department. See, even the banking department is involved in the drug money laundering. The new banking commissioner, a guy named Jerry Little, wrote the bill that would allow the banking commissioner not to audit anymore. We've got billions in a drug bank. We got the money in credit unions. This is what I found out. I don't have a hair out of place. This guy Shaheen worked for me. Walker used to work for me. These are my lawyers that I caught in the corruption. That's why they're representing the drug dealers and so forth, because that same umbrella of corruption is protecting these drug dealers. What people have to understand is there is an organization, like a business with a hierarchy, and these judges, what they do is they tried to get to be federal judges, and this is how they award them. That's the play for pay. It's beyond the normal person's imagination. And that's their biggest defense, is that people just can't believe something like this and this size could exist. But you know what? It's because you can't believe is that it does exist. Now, I have so much evidence. I mean, I have the, how about this? I have the Adjutant General of the IRS, Tim Campus, on an audio that I had called, and they thought they hung the phone up. I got him saying he has a mole in my company. The same mole who would give them my addresses to literally try to murder me. I had a wrestle a 6'7" Russian in Miami in my hotel room. Now, there's cops that showed up, security that showed up. He was in my room. I turned around. They jailed me. They came into my cell, a lawyer who I never met. His name is Jared Broderick, and told me, travel the world. Take the money. The minute I told him no, I said, uh-oh, I made a mistake. They tried to kill me that my blood pressure dropped in half. The guy came in, was talking to the nurse and go, how's he still alive? You know why? Because I only took one bite of the food and threw the rest in the toilet as soon as they turned around. I mean, it's a miracle I'm still here. But the bottom line here is that everything that I'm saying I can verify. Everything. I've got the courier from the drug dealers. I've got the guy who's laundering the money. It's not that we don't have witnesses. Who do you report it to? The FBI in this state's in the bag. I mean, the U.S. attorney, I did a video. The U.S. attorney didn't even want the courier's name. Now, I put that on video outside going into it. Mail fraud? The IRS had an accountant working, not for me, for 4 years taking all my mail and sealed envelopes to this day that I gave to the U.S. attorney. I gave the computer and cell phone from Brian Toomey, who was only giving my addresses and where I was going to get killed. He's in hiding someplace. So, you know what, as far as, you know, certain, but these judges are corrupt. I just had a hearing front to back where I never could put in a witness or a stitch of evidence. They turned around and said emails. You know what they did? They had Brian Toomey still as the admin on the account. They were taking all those emails. That's why suddenly this court would only email me notices. And they knew I was in Washington, and they emailed a notice. But I will tell you this. I can't say as much as I'd like to, but I definitely have Donald Trump's attention on these matters. He came out many times, and he was saying about the drugs in New Hampshire. You've heard him on a lot of his campaign speeches. And he even said in Virginia that they were protected by businessmen and politicians in this state. And that's exactly what happened. You know what? New Hampshire was different, and these drug dealers were different. In Miami, they built skyscrapers. These guys invested their money in politicians and judges and law firms. That's what they did. And they own the hospitals. And guess what else? They own the treatment centers. And they're the same politicians that passed Medicaid expansion to pay for it all. And this Walker, the year before, passed a bill, sued the state so they didn't have to pay taxes on the Medicaid. I mean, this is the business of corruption. And every way a politician, a judge, or a law firm can make a buck, they have done it. And I am telling you, the biggest business and the biggest moneymaker is the abuse of our children. The family courts, it's all in the bag. They can't report where all the DCYF money is. I have a federal auditor who did 21 states reach out to me and telling me that they've got dummy corporations. They're stealing federal money. And she's worried for her life. Now we got a new president. I was hoping he'd be on this a little quicker. But I've got some news even just this week. This week meaning today, I guess. That's true. That they're taking my information and evidence. And he knows about state of corruption. So let's keep our fingers crossed. Listen, we only take down two senators, Gene Shaheen and Hassan. We take them, we literally put them in jail.
Gil, are you in federal court now or are you still in state court?
I'm still in state court. They won't go to federal court. And I've tried, but they own that too. I mean, I know the judges.
They do own it, but there's a little bit. Look, you can get into federal court. You do not have to go through the steps they set. You can sue them collaterally.
I've been in federal court maybe 8 to 10 times. Just as corrupt.
Yeah.
I had a Judge Sobel, was 87-year-old woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Turned around, wouldn't take any evidence. What are you going to do? She's got an immunity, and she's going to be dead in a week. You know,
yeah.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
I've got a judge on an appeal now. They took out a retirement. The guy's in his 80s. No one wanted to put their name to it. I've got another, the appeals. I'm getting kicked out by one judge. Her name is Judy Comboy. She was only the managing partner of McLean Law Firm, who I'm suing, and she was the clerk for Judge Divine, as in Divine Millimat. It was all conflicts, top and bottom. But there's no, listen, I went to the governor. I went to Sununu, dropped the evidence right on his desk, and said, what are you doing about it? And he wouldn't say a word.
Unfortunately, that's what we've discovered in every state. They got scams going, different scams, land scams, you know, out west with the farmers. You know, it's at every level of government.
Oh, dumping too? Right. That's the thing of owning the AG's office. The state and all its departments could be corrupt and abuse you. And who do you go to? For instance, I caught illegal dumping in the Merrimack, one of the hottest carcinogenic rivers in the country. And I've got them on video dumping toxic waste right into the river. You ready? The person who owns the company is the chairwoman of the Water Pollution Board. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. That's how they protect themselves. And guess what? If you file this and say, hey, this is what's wrong, you become a target. You become a target. Now, they're threatening me with jail again. On what? I mean, they're saying show cause. Well, let me see. You freeze all my assets. We didn't have a witness. And then you're trying to, you know, threaten me. Well, what they're doing is they want me to take the money. They knew I wouldn't take the money.
Right.
So they're turning around and added that. So in other words, what happens when you don't take $50 million? Well, the first thought is to kill you. But now that you put it out there so much, maybe it's getting dangerous. You know, you play a game. The game is you've got to be visible more so than you are trouble. You know what I'm saying? If you become more trouble than you become visible, you become dead.
Right. You got to squawk loud enough that they don't dare do it because it's going to look bad. That's your defense.
Well, you know what? I was behind the curve there for a little while, but I've gotten a little ahead of them now. But it's a death dance.
We're a good fit because we're in every state of the United States. Our plan. I don't know if you know who we are or what we do.
A little, I do.
Well, look, we want to put four administrators in every county in all 3,154 counties of America in order to put the grand jury back in that is unfettered from the court. Never mind you've got government officials picking juries and giving them questionnaires and all that. No, no, we need to put it back in the people's hands. And so we want four administrators from the people that take these jobs and administer to the juries and pick the grand juries and the pettit juries and at arm's length from the court, and we want special prosecutors. And, you know, it's hard for them to go after us. We put some damning stuff in. We got people, people have brought us their cases, CPS cases, I mean, make you cry, ridiculous stuff, corruption, all the way up into the White House, you know? I mean, there's not right. everything we
Shaheen
get
Shaheen connected to Clinton. Who do you think would have the juice to have the adjutant general of the IRS be part of this scam? I mean,
exactly.
Who could do that outside of, and Bill Shaheen, he was only Hillary Clinton's campaign manager.
Right.
How's
right.
that?
It's a nasty, stinky thing, but the only thing we can do is shine a light on it. And what makes it
That's what I've been doing.
Powerful is that there is no
Well,
one
you've
got
to shine a light. But you also have to encourage the masses to get off their asses. We've got to turn around and make them believe that we can win. The greatest victory or weapon that the corrupt use is the ability to make you think that you can't win, so you don't even try.
Right, right. Look,
so
you need people, 10, 20 people, even if it was 5 people each time in court, sitting there taking notes, who are willing to write affidavits about what went on.
Not only do I have people there and witnessing, mm-hmm. I also have the cameras there, which is they're trying to get out now.
I did watch the one case where you were really having a good time with the judge there, but that's good. I mean, that's what's important.
Oh, I tell every judge, these corrupt bastards, that I'm putting them in jail.
Right,
Judge Delta,
right.
I have multiple signs. I have one sign that's about 80 feet long and about 30 feet high. I've got the judges' faces on there on a rotating basis and telling them they're corrupt. I mean, all my signs will have their faces. Right. I'm the guy that names names. We've got to turn, you know what, people follow courage. So we have to show them here and now. See, this, what people don't understand is the depth of this corruption. I can't tell you how old it is, but I can tell you the depth. The depth is beyond imagination. And if we don't take a stand, this won't get smaller. It'll get bigger. When this drugs like heroin bringing in billions of dollars, listen, our politicians and cops go cheap. And if we don't take a stand, I can tell you I have 5 children. And I'm looking at my kids and I'm saying they are not prepared to deal with this fight. And I'm not sure any of them are. So by the time and what they did is they've driven fear until generations. So with President Trump being elected, here's the one outsider that just might give us a shot. You know, and they are reaching out. So let's hope.
That's
Let's
true.
Hope. See,
he needs the people to also step up because he can't do it alone. He needs to show that he has a mandate of the people when he does something. Because the minute he does something right, you know, they're putting the full force of everything they have to discredit him. It's up to us to bring the bottom up. He's bringing the top down. It's up to us to bring the bottom up to meet him. That's how it's going.
I agree with you. And you know something? Don't count on the media for an inch of help. These guys are bought and paid for.
We got to do our own media. We're setting up NL News. We need a new YouTube too, by the way. But that's another story. But you know what
right.
I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about. Social media is the last bastion of free press. It got President Trump elected, and now I'm getting millions of views, and what you see is the commonality of suffering throughout this country. And I tell people, I'm going, it's not just New Hampshire. I know that. But this is what I know. I know I have these guys cold. The size of the state would made it easily controlled, but it also can be exposed. And what we could create is and see is a model to winning. We could have a victory. We could show them that senators and judges and start going to jail. This will be a model to use in every state. I want to put a state of corruption where I have people going into court with you, video taping your court hearing, you know, and assisting you all the way. Right now, if I go into the last three times I went into court with people, they dismissed the case each time. And they said hello to me each time.
Yeah. Well, now meaning you're going to get respect, baby. Look, at, yeah. I agree. You need a victory because people need leaders, and you need an example. And we and look, at the people really sorely needed a victory any place, one place, someplace. You know
right.
What I mean?
To show it's possible. You've got
right.
to show that these people can be beaten. And they know this too. The people who know what I'm saying is true is always the corrupt. They always know their enemy beyond the people you're trying to support. Well ahead. So that's where they target you early on. So this was and they knew the potential. I was a wealthy guy, probably made $500 million. I was in horse racing. I was the world champion in horse racing. I've won more races than any human being that ever lived. I had the largest brokerage firm in the country. So I didn't fall off a turnip truck. The insight that I used from being a homeless guy by being a priest before that made this wealth. And the same insight is what I saw this corruption. And I had to turn around. Listen, I looked for someone to hand this ball off to. I should be, I'm 61, I should be under a palm tree somewhere. But when I turned around and tried to report it to the FBI, U.S. Attorney, I kept seeing it. I turned around and said, you know what? I'm the cavalry. I had the money. I had the insight, and I had the balls to say, all right, screw it. We're going to go for it here. We're going to turn around and one time have somebody say, no, I'm not going to be bought. Money's never made me happy.
Well,
I've given most of my stuff away.
I'll tell you, you just gave the demographics of who's leading the fight. Unfortunately, we're all getting a little long in the tooth, but we have to bring up the young people, and they're out there, and we have to educate them, and they're starting.
I'm going
out.
To see them.
Yeah,
I've got
yeah.
a video out there called The Wire. I went to Wentworth College and spoke to five young men, right? It was the best interview I had. They asked insightful questions. One of the young men, I think he was 20. And you know what he said? He goes, and he won the award for the best college radio in the country. And he goes to me, Mr. Gill, he goes, I live in a town next to your sign. So I've been seeing since I've been 10 years old, all the corruption you've been putting up on your signs. And he goes, one day I was going to run a radio station and have you as a guest. He goes, then that's why I called you. And you know what I told him? I go, you know what I was doing back 10 years ago? I was talking to that 10-year-old so I can talk to the 20-year-old today. And you know what? They were on it. They were on it. They knew it was corrupt. And they're afraid of the opportunities they're losing. And that's how wealth has been disappearing. You know, and so they're on it. These were smart young guys. And you know what it did? It reminded me of why I was doing it. There was another occasion, the second time I went to jail. And when I went in, all these young people, it's all heroin and drugs, they started banging on their doors. And they started all going, state of corruption, state of corruption. And I am telling you, that's a reminder of what I'm doing. And I'm prepared to pay any cost. If we can send 18 years old to Iraq, Afghanistan, with their whole lives in front of them for freedom and justice, a 61-year-old guy can turn around and take a stand and say, you know what? You're not taking this next generation of children.
Well, amen to that, for sure. So, look at you. You have our support. We should speak a little bit more about maybe some kind of strategy, whatever you think, you know, to get a little deeper. But the people have been introduced to you tonight. This is good, and this is part of what it's going to take. Calls like this, and trying to get all these different organizations that we're focused on the same thing. Let's concentrate on getting a victory. Let's concentrate on taking one of these dirty SOBs down, And
we can get them all.
Yeah.
They're a domino. We get one, we can get them all. And listen,
yeah.
I believe President Trump's going to help us. I've got to give him some information again this week.
As long as we can keep him alive, he will help us.
Yeah,
I know.
If we're all alive,
right.
We'll help. Right.
Hey, I'm with you. And you know something? Okay. It is a fight. This is a war. The terrorists that I'm concerned about are all domestic at this point. They're the ones doing the worst harm in this state.
Absolutely.
In every state.
I agree. Domestic terrorism, that's what we live with. When people are afraid to comment on Facebook, I mean, what does that say? Our state motto in New Hampshire is live free or die. So I'm taking that literally. And I have that on all my signs. And I'm challenging these people. See, what I'm saying so many people know is the truth, even in this state. But you know, a lot of them work for the state. The biggest employer is the people of the state. And if you say the wrong thing, you lose your job. How many times have we heard cops that say, listen, if we say anything about corruption, we're going to be fired. We'll never work again. Well, that's relative in so many departments with the state and the IRS. The IRS is a tool for extortion. This thing with Tim Campus, the Adjutant General, it's on my videos called The Mole. You hear him say it. And they laughed about it. So to me, if anybody's in a situation with the IRS, you're welcome to use that as a situation saying, listen, you are obviously corrupt. So in other words, everything that they're doing now has to be questioned.
Well, it should have been questioned from the beginning as far as I'm concerned. They're a totally illegal organization anyway. The whole tax scheme was a lie. And it's just, and
Clinton
now
used them for extortion reasons. They target your enemies. How about this? Jean Shaheen, who targeted me with Clinton? Think about it. She's only been charged 3-4 times. She's the senator that went off to the Tea Party people. Remember targeting that senator got in trouble? That's the senator. It was Shaheen. And her husband, Bill Shaheen, is the godfather of this state. He is the opiate lobbyist and insurance. And they run under the same cover. And Hassan, the other senator from the state, is a clone. She owes her career to the Shaheens. Her words.
Right.
So, but I haven't been this confident ever. I was going to say a long time. I'm going, hey, a long time ago, it looked worse. Ever. Uh-huh. I think we have a president who's going to do something. I do. Listen, I've got to put something together in the next 48 hours.
Uh-huh.
And it's getting, I can tell you, I don't want to tell you through because he told me to be careful. But it is being put into President Trump's hand, and he asked for it. So I'm going to give him a narrative with a couple of snapshots of what's happening. But he knows, because I believe he used my stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my intention is every state.
So.
Yeah,
he does listen to us. We helped him in his campaign, and so he does know who we are also.
Yeah, we've had some of our stuff delivered to him, and we know that he's read it and used it. So we do have a somewhat of a relationship there. And I don't know if you've read our stuff, but I think it would be I would love to incorporate what you have there into ours,
And that's why I think what we have to do. I've been working with Anonymous. I've been working with Allegis, Porthole to Justice, and getting groups. How about this? Let's just say one of the people who run Anonymous got arrested last night.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, they tracked him down, and they arrested him last night. I know because I've been talking to him every day for months.
Right.
But he's in jail right now, and what they're trying to do is say he's crazy. So they get a medical on him, and you never see him again.
Right.
And well, that's one of their favorite tactics.
Yeah, they've done that to many people that we know. That's one of their favorite tactics, that's for sure.
Well, they're on it now. And this guy's a hero, and I'm telling you, they're going to bury him. He got too close. I've been working with him. I tied into he had a lot of the connections that he exposed through the drugs through Miami and through Florida that was coming to New Hampshire. He was also exposed to deaths of two girls up in New Hampshire. I tried to tell him. Then he had the U.S. attorney from New Hampshire go down there. He goes, they're going to help, Mike. I go, they're going to put you in jail, is what they're going to do. What they wanted to do was go down, find out exactly what you have, take what you have, and then say you're crazy and put you in a slammer. And he didn't believe me. Well, he's in the slammer tonight. So I'm going to do what I can do to help him.
It's one of the biggest problems we have is convincing people that these officials are not who they seem to be on the outside.
You know, I came up with an idea about how that happens. You ready? And I mean, I've done this for so long, but I had to rationalize that. Think about this. We all live with a certain morality. These people don't. So when people have that certain morality, it's hard for them to see that kind of evil because they don't believe it exists. They don't believe somebody could do this. And that's the corrupt and evil's greatest weapon, is that you think the way you think. Morally, you wouldn't do this to a child. You wouldn't sell drugs. But they would.
You're absolutely right.
Right. They can see you, and you can't see them. They see you as a sucker.
I can see them. I've seen enough in my lifetime that I know you're exactly right.
I'll tell you, it was the hardest thing to me to adjust to. I always looked for that line of morality and never found it. So at that point, and the minute I around and went to the depths of their thinking is when you started seeing them. And then you look at it and go, boy, it's so logical. But
well,
how many people believe that that's just not possible? And you know what? There it is. And, they're in the business of pedophiles. I mean, these guys protect who's paying. I see them now, though. And when I seen them, I started beating them.
To fight your enemy, you got to know your enemy. So, yes, you can get to thinking like them, and then you start seeing just how dangerous they are.
Yeah. You know what they said to me the other day, one of these guys? I was in court with him. One of the attorneys went over it, and he went this. And he goes, and it knocked me off balance slightly. He goes, let me get this right. He goes, Gil, he goes, you're cursed by brilliant insight, condemned by moral conviction. I went by, I go, you son of a bitch. nailed me. And it reminded me that your enemies know you so much better than the people you're trying to help.
Well,
I didn't let them see it, but I turned around and I was thinking, going, man, they got, you know, it's
successful.
A book. It's true.
It's true.
Well, Gil, we'd love to put you in our landmark case we filed, which has all the other cases in it of all this stuff you're talking about. What we did is we ended up having to take a number in the federal court, but we're not coming in as a plaintiff. We're coming in as the common law grand jury, and we only took a number because they wouldn't file our papers. We were sending them memorandums, you know. All the congressmen, all the senators, all the governors, all the Supreme Court, letting them know what corruption was going on in each state. And, of course, you know, what do you get? You get silence. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, they're corrupt, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Hey, you want to move on up? I mean, the most corrupt people are the ones that advance. Think about it.
Yes.
Who are the corrupt going to trust more? put the person that's more corrupt than them.
Yeah.
We've got more. I mean, it's like the mob. You can't join the mafia unless you kill somebody, right? Because they could put you in jail. This is no different. They turn around and have enough on you that you comply.
Well, they, I don't think they want people to have that. That's a requirement, like you said, like the mob. You got to be a made man before they give you any responsibilities.
5 years.
Absolutely, because these guys retire. So there's actually a core of corruption level. So what happens is they literally advance these people. Like Judge Delker, this guy's going to look to be a federal judge. You see, that's what they do. They move in those positions. And what I found is they have hit judges. Like there's certain judges, like complicit cops, that don't want to teach these cases. I had this case for Delker. You ready? 8 judges recused themselves. 8. Now, what do they know? And that's why the same judges get the corrupt cases. And they're the ones that advance. Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire, she ran the AG's office. She's as corrupt as all of them, which is the same reason why that Hassan and Shaheen, the Democratic senators, wanted who suggested publicly that Ayotte becomes the FBI director. The reason why? Ayotte and them work together. They're afraid that Trump gets this information and goes back on them. And I think he will. I mean, there's no greater enemy than he has than Jean Shaheen right now, who's the right-hand person for Clinton. Her husband was the campaign manager. Yeah. They controlled the IRS. If they investigate the IRS piece, how do they explain it? I got the guy on tape. And the only reason why they haven't arrested me, because they'd have to ask the question, well, okay, we'll put him in jail for taping, but what the hell did you say on the tape? Why do you think I'm still here? I mean, I take the U.S. attorney and they won't do anything. Because of what's on it. They'll kill you, just not arrest you.
Well, you better watch your six.
I sleep with a shotgun, and I am always armed. The good thing in this state is you can have a carry permit, you know, not needing a permit.
Right,
so I
right.
do carry. The next time they come for me, I promise a shootout.
Listen, Wyatt Earp was like 80 years old when he died, and he still had that big pistol between his legs sitting in his lap in his wheelchair because he
That's
had
it.
To.
Right.
Nobody wanted to come up and draw against him. I guess he kept his reflexes until late in the years.
There was a bad week that I had with Threaten. These Hell's Angels dug a hole, put a cross on it with my name on it, posted it on Facebook. No kidding. You know what I did? I took a shotgun, put it on my desk, videotaped it. You can go to thestateofcorruption.org and invited any and all to my house between Friday and Sunday, and I'll be by myself. Just don't expect to leave. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, this is a war. And I videotaped it, and no one came by. That day
you should have went out that night.
It's dangerous to go out. I went to a movie about 6 weeks ago,
yeah.
And they ran me off the road. Okay. Van in front and a cop wedged me in behind. And what they wanted, they just went to the door and told me that if they wanted to shoot me, I'd be dead at this point. And they'd be right.
Right.
That was one time I went to the movie. I'm even got movie passes and I can't go to the movies. That's what I do. So I go to court, I go to work, and I go home. I mean, it's a discipline. Assume you're dead, and assume, and then eliminate all possible fears. Just remember how important this is. And remember how this could ripple across this country. So I get excited about the possibilities. And I like it when I see them sweat. And these buggers are sweating right now.
Well, you know, look, I do believe they're suffering the death of a thousand cuts, and their million band-aids are running out. So, yeah, I mean, timing is everything, and I think you are in the right time and season here for this. So you got to just keep it up, and we need to come together with our knowledge and things that are going on and make people aware that to bring it to critical mass. Like I said, you bring the bottom up. Trump's a miracle as far as I'm concerned. If he continues to do what he's doing and help us to bring right. by bringing that top down so that within our reach, we got to rise up to bring the bottom up, because look, there's going to be vacuums created, and we need to step into those. We cannot let them take control of the vacuum that gets created as this system goes down. And that's also an important point. Everybody's got to get off their ass and do stuff, because if you don't get involved, you're going to be, like Jefferson said, those who refuse to get involved in politics and things will be run by their inferiors who do. So it's up to us.
And you know what else he said? He said, and I live by this, he goes, when the unaffected become just as outraged as the affected, then you end corruption. Meaning we've got to get people who care about one another, what happens to them. Like Black Lives Matter, absolutely. You know what I'm saying? We're going to stand behind you. This thing with police corruption, we're going to stand behind this. We're not going to let the corrupt like doing this. You know what they do? They separate it by politics, race, and religion. When I catch trolls on the internet, they're always that. They keep us divided. They keep us fighting amongst one another rather than turning around and say, can we put our differences aside and remember this isn't politics? This is corruption. And the corruption knows no color. So in other words, we've got to get together on that. And you know something? I have been seeing a change. I have been seeing that. And like minorities are supporting my videos and so forth, because who knows better than them what's gone on? No, I'm not talking illegal. I'm talking about people victimized. Then poor people are victimized. These poor people that get victimized and all, they are who got Trump elected. These are his people. Our people is his people. When he turned around and talked about corruption and not the status quo, and and there was more of us than even the corrupt ever expected. I can tell you this, from all this network of corruption, when Trump got elected, I can tell you they were never prepared for it. I don't think they believed there was a chance in hell.
No, I agree. And so we need to keep that momentum going, you know?
That's it, momentum.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the word that I use.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, look, we want victories, you know, little ones, big ones, wherever we can get them, we want victories.
You know what? I got one, and it's a big one. It's a big one. Big one in a little state, but a sign that'll make it clear the potential. How about this? If our politicians are protecting the drug dealers that are killing our children, I mean, that's something. If we can show them how they're protecting these drug dealers through all our courts, there we go. I have a family court judge that tried to set me in jail to be murdered. We can open up the network there. Title 4D money. Do you know they don't have any accounting for this? That money's going to these guardian ad litem, going to the judges, going to these law firms. They're stealing it. That Title 4D money comes out of the Social Security, ready? That is matching funds for child support. Now, how many people know that that's going on? So what you pay in child sorts gets matched. I mean, that's billions. Right. And they have no accounting for it. I talked to the federal accountant, and she's worried. She wants me to make an appointment with just Trump to try to have that done. To tell him, because that's how afraid she is, because she reported it before and is now in hiding.
Unbelievable.
21 states she has. False corporations, overbilling. She goes, they're stealing millions in New Hampshire, is one state. But she goes, I have it on 21 states.
My goodness gracious.
Right. Well, I went to the DEA. In Washington, you know what they told me? Melvin, that was his name. He goes, go to the press. I go to the press.
You know why we have the worst heroin problem? Because you're saying go to the press.
And you know what? It involves the DEA. The DEA in New Hampshire, a guy named Brianski, who was the DEA supervisor in Pennsylvania and Delaware, had 350 agents. He became the police chief in Bedford, just where the drug dealers live. And then they brought a DEA office only for me to give them the evidence, and they had all the fentanyl dumped. They were covering for him. Out of all the places in the universe to prosecute El Chapo, did you know where they wanted to bring him? To Bedford, New Hampshire. Bedford, New Hampshire. No kidding, El Chapo. And if you think that's out of the box, 2 years before this, his cousin, Guzman, that's his last name, his first cousin, was prosecuted in the state of New Hampshire. Now, you know why they're prosecuting the state of New Hampshire? Because they own them. They're not going to get any better deal from a crooked judge here that they're all afraid that he's talking. And my understanding is he's talking now. He's in a federal prison in New York. He's talking for an extra blanket is what I'm told. I don't think he'll be tunneling out of this joint.
Right.
He threatened to murder Trump, you know, and his family.
No kidding.
No kidding. And my understanding is he ain't forgetting it either. That's what I've been told.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, and we look forward to supporting you whatever we can do. I'd like to meet with you just in private one time when you get a minute. I know you're busy.
I would like that, and we could kind of find out exactly how we can help each other.
Exactly. Because
I'm good. I'm good with networking too with these other agencies. Like they've been reaching out to me, like Anonymous. You know,
right.
they have 26 million people on a following list. 26 mil.
You know, hey, look, right. We the people, that's who it is. We are the militia, and this is our battle. This is the war.
And it is to me. Right.
We should be protecting you and these other people. We should be out there looking and protecting you, being your firewall, so to speak, you know?
And I do have some people like that. I can tell you that. No, do we have as much as we need? No. But it's working. It's working. We're filling up courtrooms. We're filling them up with the cameras. It's starting to work.
That's important.
I can tell you, we're getting the judges nervous.
Look, anytime there's a camera or anybody taking notes, that's enough to make them nervous. I seen where they couldn't even put two words together because of that.
Right.
So,
and people have to understand, this thing with the camera is a right. You know, they can't say no. You have a right. Now, Delker's in court now trying to tell me I can't. You know, he's given me 8 days, actually, to write a memorandum of law why I can put these hearings on videotape, you know, to the public. So I'm saying, hey, that's free press. I mean, you got a bunch of reporters here, but they're trying. They're trying to get it off a state of corruption.
Yeah.
They're desperate.
Well, we have Supreme Court rulings that says it's your right already.
I know.
You know,
but they're desperate. I'll tell you, the thing with desperate people, this is where you get them making mistakes. You're getting them so that they have. It's like chess. You want to win a chess game, you force the other player to move where he doesn't want to move. And that's what I'm doing. I was a pretty good chess player. That's what we're doing now. They're in deep water right now. But they have no choice.
Well, that's amazing stuff. It's interesting, but it's also real. That's what people got to realize. This is the real thing. This is the real McCoy here, you know?
Well, how about this? They don't pay you $50 million for being wrong.
No, they don't.
And the knucklehead signed it. So there's no question. You can't question. And, you know, if you watch these court things, I always challenge these guys. I go, you offered me $50 million for a settlement. You will never hear them say no, because they know I bring their releases and their settlement offers to court with me every day. I'm waiting for the day they said no, but they never do. And people are just going to be smart enough and go, geez, what could be worth $50 million? And there's their answer. You know, it's really that simple. So,
Okay, I'm going to catch the last 5 minutes of the Celtics beating the Washington.
Okay, Gil, thank you very much. God bless, and we look forward to talking to you.
Thank you. I look forward to talking to you guys again, too. Thank
you. Yeah, well, you got a hold of William Blake Harley, has your number.
Yes, so I can coordinate through William?
Yes, you can. Yes.
Deal. And, that sounds good.
He knows how to get to me. He's close to me, and we'll do that. I appreciate it.
Good. That seems to be a good connection then. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you a lot. Yeah. Bye-bye. Okay. Well, that was Mike Gill, and I guess if we're done with announcements and everything else, we'll move on to the next phase of the show. I think Brent is here. I think I seen him earlier. So Brent wants to go ahead and do his thing, and then we'll open the floor up for questions for anybody else out there that has anything to any questions. Are you there, Brent? Hello, Brent.
Yes, I'm here now, I think.
There you go.
Yeah.
I can hear you now.
I'm getting better at doing this muting business. Well, I was wondering, as Mike Gill was speaking, I suppose he's gone now, but I was just kind of pulling stuff up on the Internet, tons of stuff on the Internet about him. But one article that caught my attention was the one that was talking about him being thrown in jail for contempt. And, of course, my first question is, how'd you get out? You know, the idea with contempt is they say the judge puts the jailhouse key in your pocket when you get thrown in jail for contempt. All you have to do is you pull the key out and leave whenever you want. And the key is just telling the judge, I'll do what you want me to do. I'll answer your question. I'll follow your order or whatever it is. And, of course, at some point, if you don't do it after 8 or 10 years or 6 months normally is what it comes down to, could be longer, judge will release you because it's obvious you're not going to comply, because the purpose of contempt is not to punish you. The purpose of throwing a fellow in jail for contempt is to get that person to comply with the court's order. And that's what puzzled me. I just wondered what he had to do to get out or what happened, or did he stay there the whole time? In the meantime, I'll have to wait on the answer, and we'll talk a little bit about the Declaration of 76. DJ Trump made a speech a couple of days ago that got to be quite the rage, and the evil empire were raging against him, of course, and other people were praising him and say he's had a... not a change of mind, but an infusion of confidence. That's the way it looks, for what it's worth. And he said in this speech that he made at this, probably the largest Christian university in the country, on a place called Liberty Mountain, huge. And he said that four times in the Declaration of 76, four times the drafters, or the signers, I should say, declare their reliance upon God. And then he said that in America, we do not worship government, we worship God. That's not something we would have heard from an Islamic agitator of communist tendencies like the Arab fella, Barack Hussein Obama. By the way, somebody a while ago said something about his parents, and he was, oh, yeah, and of course, the answer to the question was, how did he run for president and stay in the White House? And the answer was fraud, and that's the device of the evil empire, agitation, fraud, confusion. But bottom line with him, and Ted Cruz had the same problem. There were three Republicans running for president. They all had the same problem that Obama had. They were not natural-born citizens. And I was stunned, shocked, appalled that Otherwise, I'd hope would have been sensible-looking people were whole hog for Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz was a citizen, still is, a citizen of Canada, of a foreign country. And to be natural-born, both of your parents must have been citizens of the United States at the moment of your birth. Both parents must be citizens of the United States at the moment of your birth. Well, he didn't have that either. He was born in a foreign country. Both of his parents weren't citizens at the time of his birth. And he, while he was running for president, was a citizen of a foreign country. Born in a foreign country. I mean, it couldn't have been worse. It couldn't have been, any one of those would disqualify a fellow under our Constitution. And then Jindal and Rubio, they all had the same problem. Ted Cruz's father, now this isn't part of the test, but I mentioned it in passing because his father was a Cuban immigrant. His father, from all I could gather, was an ardent supporter of Castro. It just didn't seem right, and I still have friends that think he's the cat's meow. And that's about all he is. And his wife is a hardcore, Ted Cruz's wife is a hardcore member of the Council on Foreign Relations, big time insider. And Ted Cruz, it's not like he didn't know. He graduated from Harvard Law School and clerked, I believe, for a Supreme Court justice. If he didn't know, then he must be accredited with knowledge that he should have known better. Run for president of the United States when you know you're not qualified. Most all men in the United States, most all of them, but by the great majority, overwhelming majority, are natural-born citizens. And the Republican Party could not find one. They had three men running, that were not natural-born. Does that tell you maybe that something's up behind the curtain that isn't right? It does to me. We're in an awful pickle. The deep state is in control. Deep state, I looked into that a little bit. Those words deep state first occurred during the reign in England of King James I, of King James Bible fame. And he and his closest associates said that the English people had no business delving into or knowing about affairs of the deep state. And he was of the ilk of the law of the city as opposed to the law of the land. Matter of fact, he believed that the law was in his breast, and he said so. And he's the one that said in a meeting with some of the powerful men, he said, "The king protecteth the common law." And Judge Coke shot his mouth back at him before he could think and said, "Nay, sire, the common law protecteth the king." In other words, you're under the law. Lex rex, not rex lex. And all of a sudden the room got deathly silent. And he knew that he was on the edge of having his head rolled off his shoulders. And he fell down on the floor and asked and made an apology. He didn't ask forgiveness, made an apology. But he never backed off from what he said. He apologized for having said it so forcefully. And eventually he was tried for his life, I think more than once, if I'm not mistaken, because he wouldn't give in. He saved his neck for that moment. By the way, Judge Coke is quoted more than any other person. The ones that drafted and debated the Constitution and the Declaration quote him more than any other person. He was the great champion of the common law and the drafter of the commentary on Magna Carta that has become the world standard. Coke's commentaries on Magna Carta. Christian man, like John Locke, Christian man. Indeed, the Declaration of 76 does say Bible-believing Christian man. There's a difference. Many people call themselves Christian. Few really give much credence to the Bible when it comes right down to it outside of talking about it. Few know what's in it at all. Don't be one of those people. But Trump says that the Declaration of 76 four times mentions the creator of all things. Well, America justifies its founding foremost upon our forebears' direct appeal to their personal creator, judge of all heaven and earth. And they say this, appealing, in the end, they say appealing to the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions. That means for the detection of every wrong intent. We appeal to the supreme judge of the world for his detection of every wrong intent that may be in us that we are too blind to see. That's what they're saying. And then they say, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. Now, that's a lot of fancy talk. Of course, these men were educated, as some people say, maybe beyond their intelligence. I don't know, but they used a lot of fancy words. I think it's important to break phrases like that down to simplicity. And it can be done relatively easy. The words with a firm reliance mean trust. That's it, and that's all, just trust. With a firm reliance, trust on the protection. Well, that's easy enough, protection. Trusting on the protection of divine providence. Trusting on the protection of divine gods. That's God. That's what divine means, Latin word, means God. Providence, another fancy Latin word. What does it mean? It means, use the old English, it means provender. It means provision. With a firm trust on the protection of God's provision. Let me repeat that. We sign this with a firm trust on the protection of God's provision. God is the provider of all things that may be provided. And they were claiming that they trusted God for the provision to do what they had to do. And if a man is not trusting God for the provision to do what he's got to do, he's trusting some other meagerly created thing, maybe other men, maybe himself, doesn't amount to a pinch of dried owl manure. If you're not trusting in the creator of all things, you're weak by comparison. On the radio, we're going through the French Revolution. And during the French Revolution, which is the prototype and studied by all revolutionaries since, it was in the 1790s, just after our independence. And all the revolutions since, the Russian Revolution, the Cambodian Revolution, the Chinese Revolution, the Romanian Revolution, all of the revolutions and all the leaders of the revolutions of modern times with which we are familiar, studied intently the devices of the French Revolution because it was agitated and controlled behind the scenes. And the way they controlled it was this. Watch this and think about America. They said this. They said everybody's equal. Everybody. Men are equal with women. That was a big part of the French Revolution, that men are equal with women, and women are equal with men. And there is nobody above anybody else. That's a device of the evil empire. Why do I say that? Because all men are not equal. Listen to me close and bear with me. I am not equal as a basketball player to Larry Bird. I am not. I am not equal to Justice Koch in my intelligence and understanding of our common law. I am not equal to some of the great physicists that I've read about that understand atomic energy. I'm not equal to them. But watch me. That does not mean that I am not of equal worth. I am, in the eyes of God. But I'm not equal to them, and to say that is abundantly stupid. It's silly to say that all men are equal. Our Declaration of 76 says all men are created equal. Is that right? Well, I think it's right if we understand the understanding of the phrase. What it means is all men are equal before the law and of worth in the sight of God. That's what that means. I'm not equal to my father. No man is greater than his teacher, says Jesus Christ. And on we go. Men are not equal. Equality is egalitarianism. Well, the reason the evil empire pushes that line, and the French Revolution proved this, is because when you tell people that and it becomes a mantra, a mania, which it has to some degree here, it creates constant, never-ending agitation and fighting. And that's what's going on. And that's what went on in the French Revolution. And those that operated the revolution, you go read about it behind the scenes. They knew the only way they could destroy the country, and they did, and the proof of that is they're still destroyed. And this last election proves it again. They will do anything they're told in France, and they've been that way ever since Julius Caesar conquered Gaul, back just before the first century. Gaul is France. And the French had been under the thumb of Babylonian law as the Roman Empire, and then as the Roman Church ever since, and it's never stopped. When Rome told them to massacre 30,000 Huguenots in France at the giving of the signal, back in the year 1572, they massacred them, murdered them all over France. When Rome told them to make war on England and attack Scotland, they did it. When Rome told William the Conqueror to conquer France, Normandy, to invade, he invaded. And now, of course, and when the Nazis came into France, amazingly, they didn't resist. Now, I hasten to add, I know men from France, good men. They've fled to the United States. I met one not long ago in Reno, Nevada. It was amazing to talk to him. He's so upset about Islam in France and what it's doing. He's upset about the people that hold power and, of course, this fellow they recently elected. France, I don't want to get down on France because the truth of the matter is, I just want to observe history, but the truth of the matter is, I'm no better than any Frenchman that has ever lived. As a matter of fact, he's of equal worth with me. Equal worth. But I want to learn a lesson from what's happened to France. And I see it again. And the French Revolution was the culmination of a long, ugly history. The stamp of Roman law, religion, law, and government on a country and a people. And we still see it now. It's still going on. Well, the badges of what happened in France, we should be alert to here and what's happening to us. So we are of equal worth. How boring would life be? And this is what they want, those useful idiots of the evil empire. How boring life would be if we really were all equal. We'd all look like robots made out of the same mold. What a boring, ugly, hellish existence. It would be hellish. I'm thankful that girls are prettier than boys, at least they ought to be. And I'm thankful that men are what they are, at least they ought to be, men. And I find that it's of curious fascination that that seems to be the focus of the ultimate obliteration of differences. Men and women are equal. They can even serve on warships together. Do you really think that they're serving on warships together, or are they just abusing girls on warships and girls are abusing men? I have good evidence it's the other way around and goes round and round and round. And the ugliness, and this fellow I had not met, Mike Gill, I don't know him, but he made some true statements. The deep state is just deep dirt. That's all it is, deep, ugly dirt. I want no part of it. I don't believe it's reformable, personally. I believe that God would have us stand, say, can we beat them? Can we overcome them? Well, we can overcome them, but we won't do it by attacking them head on. How do I know? Three ways. I've tried it, number one. Number two, I've seen other people try it. And number three, Jesus Christ says it will never work. Well, I'll go with the evidence. That's good evidence. The laws of nature, unwritten in creation, in the nature of things, I've got that. The laws of nature is God, written in the Bible. That phrase taken from our Declaration of 76, the two revelations of God's, two volumes of revelation of God's will to man. Well, Jesus Christ put it this way. He said, well, I'll give you the translation with which you're probably familiar anyway, the King James. Do not resist evil. Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, Matthew chapter 6, and Matthew chapter 7. Do not resist evil. I always thought that was odd, always since I was little. Why? Well, it seems to me that evil ought to be resisted. Besides that, it says later on in the New Testament, it says, resist evil, and the evil one will flee from you. Resist it says. Well, how can the Bible say resist it, and then say Jesus Christ say resist not? Well, of course, I discovered that it's just usually just a matter of words, just define the words, and it's not that difficult. The fellow gets in the habit of doing that and kind of develops the art of being a word man and just paying attention to words and being real close with words. And you'll find that the people who everybody hold up are so educated and smart, all they are people that pay attention to words. That's all they do. And that's what they were trained to do, and they just keep doing it. And then they, in their evil, often begin to twist words. But God does want us to pay attention to words, the lawgiver of all lawgivers. And he says this, pay attention to words. Words must be important to you. You must be a word man, because if you aren't, men who lose the meanings of words lose their lives, their liberties, and their properties. And no question. Well, Jesus Christ said, do not resist evil. Well, I looked up the words. I tried to find the shades of the meanings. And I discovered that, and it's hard to put into one word, and I don't blame the people that translated it that way. There's truth in what it says. But there's a special kind of resistance of which he speaks. He says, do not, watch me with this word or this phrase, do not square off with the evil one. Do not square off with him. What does that mean? That means don't draw a line in the sand and stand in front of him and expect you're going to be able to change blows in a Viking-like contest to see who is the last man standing. You'll be flat real quick. Because the evil empire has a monopoly right now in America. It shouldn't have happened, but it did happen. They have a near monopoly, and in Europe and South America even more, a monopoly on force and violence. And they're gaining it here. The only thing that's stopping them here is our fundamental right. It's protected, supposed to be protected, our Constitution protects it, of self-defense and of the right to keep and bear a firearm. Do not square off with the evil one. That's not the way to win. We're fighting a war, friends, neighbors, and kin, that takes more savvy than that. There's no honor with the evil empire. We're not fighting a chivalrous battle. And if you're not fighting someone who has honor, dignity, someone who really doesn't have the pride even of a nanny goat, do you think that the Bill Clinton, Soros, Obama-type crowd, do you think there's anything to which they would not stoop? No, they're vermin. Vermin. And their lifestyles show it. There is no depth to which they will not stoop. George Soros is a Jew from Germany, and he spent his teenage years plundering Jews that the Nazis had beat down. He joined the Jews that had joined the Nazis, and we're behind them to a great degree, by the way. The revolutionaries were Jewish. They wanted to join them. They were afraid of them, so they joined them, and then they began to plunder each other. Another point that we can notice about the French Revolution and the evil empire, Nazi Germany, and the Jews plundering Jews, and now Soros is here doing evil, dirty, low deeds, plundering his own people. He's there. And he says it was a good thing he did. And the reason people do things like that is because they're scared little animals. They're afraid of the powers that be. They're afraid of the evil empire. If you can't beat them, join them. And I'm sorry, it's nothing personal. I know you're my brother, or you're my kin, or you're my neighbor, but I got to do what I got to do. Well, that's what happened in the French Revolution, too. Robespierre and Danton, they were kind of the leaders, and they got together, and they got the mob worked up, and there were people behind them. And the mob went crazy, and they went through the prisons in France, in Paris especially. And wholesale, this is the madness of it all, just wholesale murdered everybody in the prison. Some of them would have been on their side. Others weren't. But they murdered everybody. Then they came out. And then they slowly but surely, the king came to them and said, King Louis the 16th, he said, listen, I'm not against you. Whatever you need, let me know, and I'll give up my position. I'll let you have your assembly. He did all those things. Within a year or two, they stormed his place, got him to move to Paris from Versailles, and then they murdered him without warning, the mob. And then Danton had been in charge. Then they got mad at him or something. I don't know what happened. They murdered him. And then Robespierre, that was his chance. He took over. Robespierre. He was all for it, really. He didn't care who got killed. Now I'm in charge. So the motto of the French Revolution was this: we're going to strangle the last priest with the guts of the last king. And we're going to strangle the last king with the guts of the last priest. That's what they said. They're going to kick God out of the country. They took a prostitute off the street, stripped her naked, paraded her up and down the street and into the Notre Dame Cathedral, or as we say in America, Notre Dame. They had a beautiful throne for her. They had a fancy ceremony. And they enthroned her as the goddess of France. And they called her, listen to this, reason and logic is our goddess, and here is the idol of our goddess, this woman, worshiping a woman. It's bad enough to worship a man. Well, I love girls, don't get me wrong. It's all bad. But God is male. He is Father. Jesus Christ is man, not woman. It's just more ugly, dirty perversion than the stripping of the woman. And then Robespierre declared himself high priest of the new religion, supreme priest, God on earth. Robespierre was a lawyer of the civil law, called a civilian. Well, it wasn't 6 months. They got tired of Robespierre, and they murdered him. And then what happened? Out of the pieces, there was an unknown personality in that revolution. He rose to the top. An Italian fella, a lawyer of the law of the city, a civilian again, just like his brothers and his father, well-versed in the law of the city, the law of Rome at that day. And he rose to power over the entire army of France and tried to conquer all of Europe and the world. His name was Napoleon Bonaparte. And he said this, just like Robespierre said, essentially, it's all different labels, but it's all the same thing. He said, I am France, and France is me. And all of France hollered back at him, we are you, and you are us, and we have subsumed our identity as the French people into you, Bonaparte. Well, be careful who you do that to, because whoever you subsume your identity in, whoever you look to as your final arbiter of right and wrong, whoever you choose to follow, when he goes down, or it goes down, you go down too. And when Napoleon went down at Waterloo, all of France fell with him. And France has never recovered, even to this day. So be careful. And that's what these fellows that subscribed to the Declaration of 76 were being careful to do. They were being careful to subsume their identity, to pay homage to the supreme judge of all the world, the creator, the maker of heaven and earth, to rely on him entirely and to look to him for the rectitude, to the rightness of their intentions, to show them where they were wrong. And if we don't do that, we're eventually going to go down, because if we don't do that, we're going to put our trust in someone else or something else. It's inevitable. It has to happen. Even godless France, who swore with filth while they were chopping the heads off of 60,000 people. The blood was running in the street, ankle deep some days. And then the firing squad killed another 240. Close estimates. They wanted to get rid of God, but it's odd, isn't it? They had to put some kind of religion in place, and they put Robespierre up as God on earth, as vicar of God, the supreme being, standing in place of God, wielding the law of God. That's what they say. It's not true, but that's what people believe. And it's important that we as Americans climb out of this dirty, ugly hole, because the religion, law, and government of the evil empire pressing on us a pace like they've never pressed before, those evil, ugly persons, are making the final push. And the mania has reached a pitch that I didn't ever consider reaching when I was a boy. Back in the 50s and 60s, I saw the madness of the beginning. I remember it very well, especially by the time we get into the 60s and up into the 70s, it got plumb crazy. And then it just fell off in the dirt, and it's been getting dirtier ever since. The godlessness. Godlessness. That means, what is godlessness? That's lawlessness. We have become lawless as a people. Anything goes. Look around you. And the only remedy to lawlessness, says the true lawgiver, is true law. The true will of the true lawgiver. And that's what law is the will. The will of the true lawgiver. Well, I count five times in the Declaration of 76 that the subscribers acknowledge the creator of all things, more than just acknowledge him. They rely on him. And this is no declaration of independence. I've said it before, it bears saying again. And as far as I know, no place in the documents are there the words found, Declaration of Independence. Not even in the title. The title just says Declaration of the Unanimous 13 States. And it is not. It is, if you read it, just think about it a minute, point this out, it's not a Declaration of Independence. It's a declaration of shifting dependence. They declare that they're shifting their dependence from the Crown of England for protection to the God of all provision, providence, the supreme judge of all the world, and they say it just that way. They had trusted the mother country to protect them. The mother country at that very time had plotted and had plans to infect the American colonies through the slave population with the smallpox virus and kill a third to the half of the Americans. It was worth it to them because they weren't so stupid as to not realize the unbounded, unmeasurable wealth that could be drawn out of the land bounded by the boundaries of what is now the United States. They saw a continent. And they knew that it would enable them. And that's what the empire was all about. All wealth would flow back to them. And they were willing to kill a third to the half the population. Why isn't this story told? That's what people knew at that time, so much so that George Washington commanded that his army receive the Continental Army. Well, he didn't command it. That's wrong. It was voluntary. They chose to receive the smallpox vaccination knowing that in all probabilities, 10% of them would die. Because at that time, they didn't know how to gauge the vaccination, the amount. And so he did it. He staggered his troops. He'd do a certain amount of them, and then it would take 2 weeks for them to recover because they'd get stabs all over their bodies. And you can read the accounts of this. It's all a fact. Germ warfare was a reality then, just as it is today. We need the protection of divine providence. Protection of men will not do it. Oh, yes, we need to do what God tells us. We need to fight the good fight. But we need to do it in the way he tells us to do it and not square off with them. Don't square off with them. No, they'll crush you utterly. What is the answer? The answer is true lawlessness. That's the ultimate answer. Or true. True lawfulness is the ultimate answer. And there's only one way to be lawful, and that's to do it individually. To know the law and follow it. How do you know the law? Well, three things. You have to learn it first. Second, you have to keep it and guard it from any additions or subtractions. I'm quoting God's book called Deuteronomy. And third, you have to do it. Learn it. Safeguard it from additions or subtractions. And do it. It's an individual matter. That's your greatest weapon. Your greatest weapon is to govern yourself. From own experience, for what it's worth, I just say that I've tried a whole lot of things in life. I've tried politics, pretty heavily involved, ran the U.S. Congress. I've tried the courts. I've even tried churchianity, deeply involved in it at one time. Been thrown out of a few churches. I'm not bragging, I'm not complaining. I'm just stating the facts. I can talk about the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, then I can tell a little bit about my personal experience. I've tried a whole lot of things. I've tried working hard. I've tried not working so hard. I've tried making friends with the right people. I've tried being a hermit for a few years. And I still come back now to the same thing. It comes down to one thing. And I found that what my father taught me, inadvertently, he didn't say, I want you to learn this. I just noticed when he talked to people, he repeat this often. And so, inevitably, I got the idea. He'd say to people, if the conversation permitted it, he'd say, what is the whole duty of man? What is it? What is the one thing we've got to do? Now, that phrase is right out of the book of Ecclesiastes, the last chapter, chapter 12, verses 12 through 14. Solomon speaking. He asks the question rhetorically, what is the whole duty of man? And the answer is twofold. Fear God, number one. Number two, keep his commandments. That's it. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is all of man. And then he says, and the reason is because everything we do is going to be, we'll answer for everything we do. But that's reducing it to simplicity. And if our country is going to have greatness, power, it does not take a majority. God does not operate on majority principle. It takes what I like to call a critical mass of men who really believe that they should not fear men, but fear God, and do what he tells them to do. But again, in order to do that, I'm trying to encourage the idea that we need to relax and learn what it is he wants us to do and ask him to teach us. He promises to do that. And anyone who would sneeze at that is game for what Islam has for us. Islam has domination, murder, raping of our wives and daughters. Let's quit messing around. Let's talk reality here. All over the world, they're doing it now. They're killing men's wives and they're killing men's husbands or killing women's husbands and then raping their wives on top of the bodies, slitting throats, cutting off heads. That's what they have for us here. It's breaking out in France. Sweden is the rape capital of the world now because of the madness of open borders. I went through St. Louis not too long ago. I noticed a main road running through town, biggest mosque I've ever seen being built. That's not my place to worry about whether we're going to win this struggle, but it is my place to do right. My greatest weapon is to do what God tells me to do. He doesn't say necessarily to attack. Here's what he says. He says, having done all, stand. Just stand where you are. No, I ain't budging. I ain't going no further. This is it. No, I'm not going to tolerate your talk. I'm not going to listen to your Islamic baloney. I'm not going to listen to your lesbian BS. I'm not going to listen to it. I'm going elsewhere. I'm no part of this madness. When judgment falls, it can fall on you, but I'm out of here. I'm not going to put up with it. I'm not going to discuss it with you. There's nothing to discuss. If you want to be that stupid, then I got to go someplace else and talk to somebody that's got enough sensibility, got ears to hear. It's time to stop talking. It's time to stop debating. It's time to just drop it and do right. Well, that's my commitment for what it's worth, and if I can encourage other people to follow me, I'm not going to be caught up in this. I'm no part of this madness, what I see going on. I hope, I'll end with this, hope DJ Trump has his nose headed in the right direction. I have a friend that used to wrestle a lot when he was in the Army. He was quite a wrestler. He told me, Brent, the key to wrestling is always one. All you've got to do is get a man's nose pointed in the direction you want his body to go, and his body will follow. That's all you got to do. If his nose is pointed in the right direction, his body will probably follow. That's true, of course, with a horse, too. If you can pull his head in the right direction, he's supposed to follow, unless he's a rubberneck. I used to have one of those. Well, I thank you. Thank you, Gerard. And again, the things that I say here are not always necessarily the opinions of the other men that speak here, but they're my opinions, my points of view. And I am deeply appreciative of the opportunity of those others here who allowed me to take a little time and say a few words. Gerard, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I have this fear that I've been talking all this time and to myself. But I had fun doing it either. But I always say have fun doing it either way. Anyway, thanks, Gerard.
Because that's my gift. I can always talk to myself and not get bored.
Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, that was good. Thank you. And the queue is open if anybody wants to get in for any questions, whether it be Brent or myself or about anything else. I have a couple people in there. So it's, let's see, it's 11:04, so we have a little time left. And I'm going to go ahead and take the first guy that's in the queue. Okay, you've been unmuted. It says George Baker. Are you there?
Yes, yes, I'm here. Hello, Gerard.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello, Brent.
Hi,
oh,
George.
Oh, awesome. my name's Cliff, actually. George is right here. We've been listening to the whole call. We've listened to a lot of the calls. And not to step on anyone's toes or anything like this, but Gerard, you by far are my favorite person in this whole National Liberty Alliance. When somebody riles you and you get going, oh my God, Mother Teresa, step aside. Gerard's on the case. And I mean, you put the fear of God in me, man, but you're always spot on, and I love it. I mean, you really get my brain to thinking, man. That's just how awesome you are. But with that aside, everyone else in the National Liberty Alliance, you are all awesome and stuff like this. But my question is, with the welcoming committee, I've been helping George with making the phone calls and, you know, trying to reach out to people. And a lot of people have answered the calls, and a lot refuse to answer the calls. And I'm wondering, is that a common thing? I mean, are there people out there that, you know, are just, you know, are so afraid that, you know, they don't want to be bothered, but yet they still listen? Or, I mean, is there something, you know, else that can actually be done? And, you know, so I came up with the idea that, well, maybe I can talk with these people on Skype. And believe it or not, I've got three people on Skype right now that I actually talk with. Ron Flick is one of them. James Beerson is another one. And I think the guy's last name is Rodriguez. And I was wondering, with your guys' permission, now I'm not a member, other than I do pride myself as a courtroom observer. And I love to see what is always going on, especially I pay a lot of attention to how the judge is acting and the court clerks. And believe you me, a while back we was given, me and George was given a task to go to Detroit to find out if papers that John had filed were filed. One of the court clerks, a black guy that we was dealing with, he diligently tried to search for the file number, the court case. There was nothing ever filed in the Detroit district. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this other guy showed up. And I saw him. I motioned to Bud. He turned around and, I mean, we thought that this guy was security, but he basically identified himself as the supervisor of the supervisor county clerk or, you know, some supervisor title. Well, anyway, to get to the bottom line, the guy was absolutely obstinate. He did not want to cooperate or work with George in any way, shape, or form. He said that he did not want to see the case, which kind of told me right there he actually did. he opened up the mail, and it somehow mysteriously got lost. The previous caller that was on there, I agree with him 100%. You know, we got to, you know, come together. We got to stand strong, and we got to fight the good fight. You know, keep reaching for freedom. That's my new motto. Keep reaching for freedom, because if we don't, we will never be free. But I just wanted to, you know, if I could get some type of advice from you guys, you know, what we could do on the George could do on the welcoming committee. And with that, I yield.
Okay, thanks a lot, Cliff, for that. Look, if you're talking to good guys, if you're talking to Ron and Jim, I know them personally, and I know that their head is in the right place. So I don't know specifically what you can do. I mean, there's lots of reasons why people don't respond, and probably, you know, fear is not the least of them, and you know, some people just, you know, they just don't, they don't want to put the time in, they're lazy, whatever you want to say, I don't know. They need to be motivated, you know, but meanwhile, they're there watching. So if they're watching, I don't know what it is that was going to make them move eventually, you know. I mean, look, the least they should do is contribute. If you don't want to do anything, join and contribute so that we, those of us who want to do something, you could help us. I mean, I don't want to get on the whole money thing, but it is money thing. If you want to listen and you want to just kind of keep track of things, you should support us so that we can continue to stay in existence and that we can continue to work, because that's a big part of it. Now, they could do a lot more than that, but that's the least that somebody should do. And it's the easiest because, you know, there's no sweat involved in that. You know, it's very easy to make a donation. And that's what I would suggest to them. You know, hey, if you don't want to do anything, why don't you become a contributing member anyway? You're getting our information. We have so much good stuff on the site. We have so much free information. You know, there's so many things to download. I mean, we give a lot of value for, and I think the problem is we give it away for free. And a lot of times, because you're giving something for free, people don't appreciate it. You know, you make them pay something.
Right, exactly.
And they want to get some value out of it because they paid for it. You know what I mean? John is very much against making you pay for anything. But, and I mean, and he's put hundreds and thousands of hours into some of this work that we've compiled. I mean, we got a book on there, How to Get Into the Courts. It tells you about how to do motions. And it's a good book because, I mean, it's written. It was taken from the law, from a lawyer who was teaching it. And we pulled that stuff out and compiled it. And what we did was we wrote it more towards a common law lean than like the bar lawyers do. So we opened it up somewhat. So it's a very good course. And that course, I mean, they're getting thousands of dollars for that, different people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cheapest I ever heard.
And you know, the funny thing, Gerard, and I don't mean to cut you off, the other thing that me and George have noticed that when we was given our assignments by Ron, we do notice that every last one of the people that we was given, they did complete the civics course. They were still probably struggling with the Constitution course, and I was even charged by, challenged by Marjorie Decker to not worry about the civics course, but take the Constitution course. And believe you me, I am going to take it.
Very important. That's
go ahead.
Important. I think the Constitution course at this point is more important than the civics course. It's actually easier to get through. I believe the Constitution course, it's shorter. You know, you can sit down and power through it if you want to. The civics course is more involved. But listen, that Constitution course, once you take it and you learn it, you're going to use it. It's going to come to you when you need it. And that's why I think it's important. We also noticed that people that finished the Constitution course are the people that are doing the most and sticking around the longest, as opposed to the civic course. I don't know what that means. I just know, look, we're looking at figures. This is Ron has drawn some tables, you know, and spreadsheets. And I can tell you, the people that complete the Constitution course are the people that stay with us the longest and do the most. So take that for whatever it's worth. Okay?
Oh, I believe you, me, Gerard, I will. And George has done both the civics and Constitution course. And as far as, you know, the donating of money, I'm flat busted broke. Hopefully this Wednesday, when I go to go for my second Social Security Administration hearing, I'm going to exercise my Fifth Amendment right and not say anything and force my lawyer to answer all the questions, because I think that's where I screwed up the first time. But I mean, me and George, we have talked about it, and George has got his Social Security that he's, you know, managing. IRS has got their fingers in it like you wouldn't believe, and I guarantee you, I wish we could, you know, set mouse traps so that every time the IRS goes to reach for something, the mouse trap goes off. You know, that would be completely awesome. We're going to work on that one and figure out how to stop them. But, if I get my SSI, Gerard, I promise you that you guys will be getting compensation from, you know, some guy that you don't know from Michigan, but literally gives a damn about you guys and wants to see freedom given back to the people who it was originated for.
Well,
and,
I appreciate,
you know,
that. And look, it doesn't.
And
it's the,
and I mean,
Mike.
And you know, and Jesus said, you know, Jesus said in the Bible, a brother sticketh closer than anyone that you know, but always keep your enemies closer. And or I think I screwed that all up. keep your family close, but keep your enemies closer, or something like that. And you know, that means basically, to my understanding, is there are a lot of people that want to be in power, that want it all, that, you know, will do anything by hook crook to get it. Those are the ones that we need. Those are the ones we need to take down. And I mean, and here's another funny thing, Gerard. Me and George have an argument going. It's a friendly argument, you know. He says if we take the courts down, we'll get control. I say, well, let's go one step further. Let's take the judicial system down. You take the judicial system down, the courts are going to be absolutely lost, and then they're going to turn to us and say, what do we do? We don't know what to do. Who would be right in the situation?
Well, I don't know. It's you got to be careful making vacuums. That's the problem. That's what I always you know, I mean, how do you like, it's kind of like Brett says, if you go head on into something, you get squashed flat. Whereas if you can flank them, how do you take the judges down? That's the top of the top. That's like that one guy that went out and started a whole thing. What was it? I forget his name, famous guy there, you know, with TV and stuff. And he tried to indict Obama. And I mean, it was a joke because there was no way you're going to indict Obama. Obama has control over everything. I mean, you know, him and Hillary and that whole system, you know, they're not going to indict him, you know? And so, look, if you could take them down, you're right. They would be lost. But the thing is are you going to do it? I mean, how are you going to do it? I don't know. You know what I mean? And so I think what's going on now is they've gotten so bad that they're taking themselves down. You see, that's what we have to do. We have to play that chess game, like Gil says. Play. You got to be a chess player, and you got to make them. You got to force them into moves that they don't want to make, and they'll confess themselves eventually. And I think that's the plan. I don't think that we can go in there and meet these guys head on because they got all the resources. And when they look at you and they put all their resources on you, you're not going to hold up to it. But if they look at all of us coming in and they don't know who to focus on, that's how we're going to do it. So whether we go after the judicial system or whether we go after the courts or whatever, I mean, they're one and the same. I mean, the judicial system and the court, they're both the same. You know, you don't have a judicial system without judges, right? So it's a unit.
Instead of like Brett said, instead of going head on, look at it in a different perspective as a chess game. Make your moves accordingly. That will force the other person to either accept the challenge or resign. I get it. I absolutely get it.
I'll tell you what, one of the biggest things I've learned in this fight since I've been in it is to learn how to think like them. Like what happens is when they suffer a defeat, they don't sit in the corner and snivel and lick their wounds and say, oh, poor me. They sit there and they go, how can we use this to our advantage? And they do almost every time. And so every time I think like that, every time we have a little setback, I say, okay, how can we turn, where's the silver lining in this? And there always is one because, look, it's God's plan and God's in control. So you know there's a silver lining. You just got to find it. It was a lesson that you lost in the first place. So maybe you weren't thinking the way he thinks. Maybe you were putting your own will into it. I don't know. But I do know every time we thought we were beat, every time we let go of that rope, and then we said, well, I don't know, and we went back and pulled on it, we discovered that they had wrapped it around their neck. When we pulled it, we found them hanging on it. Instead of despairing, we went back and we found out that things worked to our advantage in spite of ourselves. We didn't do it. It was divine providence. You know what I mean? So never get too proud or haughty or anything like that, because look, if you're fighting a good fight, hey, we know how it ends. The good guys win, right?
Exactly.
So you got to have that attitude, basically. That's my feeling. But anyway, I'm going to move on to some other people. It's a little late. We got some people in there. I don't want to take up everybody's time. It's good talking to you, Cliff.
Yeah, no wonder, Gerard, that my mom still to this day calls me Motormouth. I'm absolutely sorry. And I mean, that was going to be my nickname, but they decided to go with something else. So thank God that didn't stick. But thank you again, Gerard. You guys out there are doing the most awesomest thing that I mean, even a non-member like myself can be proud of. And before I go, Bud, do you have anything that you want to say? George he's got his mouth full of food, and I think I heard him mumble, you guys are awesome, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Cliff.
And with that, again, Gerard, thanks for taking my call. You guys are awesome, and I yield.
Thank you, Cliff. Okay, I have somebody in the queue. I have no name, just a number. You've been unmuted.
Hi. My name is Rebecca, and okay. I am in Moorhead, Kentucky, the battlefield of Tim Davis. And there is another big issue pretty much in our backyard in a little town called Owingsville, about 25 minutes from Moorhead, and someone actually mentioned it earlier, and this is Samuel Gerard, who is a 56-year-old Kentucky Amish farmer, and the FDA has managed, after 5 years of battling this, they've managed to actually indict him. He's in a Lexington prison or Lexington jail, and he is due for sentencing on June the 30th. And so there's a small group of people who are trying to quickly gather as much as we can to help him. And basically, he's growing natural products on his farm. He came home from construction to be on his farm with his sons and to do a family business, grows everything natural, and the FDA claims that when he's on mission, he doesn't have radio and TV and all that stuff, phone and all that stuff, but they claim that he's making misbranding of the drugs, but there's no drugs. It's all natural grown things, and he has three items that are up for attack, and one is a salve, and one is an oil, and there's another some kind of salve, tumor gone, and he did make claims that it could help cure cancer, and he has testimonials of this, but he didn't know he couldn't make them. And so over 5 years' time, he's changed the labels. He's done everything. They keep coming back. They get him in trouble for this. He misses a hearing as of last August. He's been called a fugitive for 5 months. They finally show up. They arrest him. He's facing federal prison for 68 years for growing natural products, and he didn't properly label things, but he's changed everything. He's worked with them, and so there is, you know, a small group of people trying, and I'm going to do everything in my power that I can do to help him. And they have like $20 million or $2 million in fines against their property. There's 12 children, 25 grandchildren, and a wife, Elizabeth, and they will all be run off of their land. And so this kind of just recently came to our attention. And so my question really is, because he's innocent and he's just about to be sentenced, what can we do? Could I talk to someone from NLA? Could you give me a phone number and kind of direct me on what I need to do to help Samuel Gerard?
Well, the first thing is, you know, he's at a sentencing, which is like at the end of the road here.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you can't call attention. Like people, we could do a phone call thing that might help. You know what I mean? Having people call in and stuff. We certainly should probably file a habeas corpus on him. That's what I would say. I would go in and fill out the habeas corpus, number one. In other words, That's like a show cause of what they have to hold them on. And I guarantee you what they're holding him on is not constitutional principles, and they know it. And look, he must have something that's working, because if it didn't work, they wouldn't care. You know what I'm saying? They've probably looked into his products. They're probably very good. The fact that he's curing people is the reason they're going after him.
They're organically grown. Yeah.
Right. In other words, if he's curing, they don't want a cure. They got too much money invested in it. Now, we do have part of that in our court case. I don't know, you know, we want people that are in trouble like that. You know, by filing this master case, we're talking about having people attach themselves to it and saying, look, you can't move on my case until you decide this case, because what's in that case that you haven't decided is going to affect my case. And it absolutely will. Now, how we do that, I don't know yet. And I can't tell you that. All I can tell you is get on there and go to the NLA, and I think we still have that smiley face where it asks you what problems you're having, and go into the habeas corpus section. And I don't know where the FDA stuff, I'm sure there's a section that you can fill out in order to get a habeas corpus, because he's in danger of going to jail. So let's get a habeas corpus started. With the habeas corpus, he's not in jail yet. He could do his own affidavit, or you could do it for him, and next friend can do it. That at least gets the story, you know, out, and it gets a paper that's going to get filed, that we're going to file in this case, that we now have a number on, that will make it on a docket. You see, that's what they don't want. They don't want anything documented, you know, and it's unfortunate that we weren't in a position and didn't know about it before he got to the point where they're going to sentence him. The only thing that really saved him now, since the trial is over, I mean, I don't know, he didn't appeal. I mean, he's been through appeals or no?
He fired his lawyer. He is Amish. He fired his lawyer. We don't know exactly what happened there, but he had filed appeal. I'm not sure if Samuel did it himself, but it was a motion to dismiss based on the Fifth Amendment violations, and there was something like lack of jurisdiction, lack of standing, and it was filed February the 16th, and there was one other reason. I do have it here, but it'll come up. He was denied. It was motion to dismiss for violations of the grand jury clause of the Fifth Amendment filed February 16th, 2017, United States of America versus Samuel A. Gerard, defendant. And
so basically what it's saying is they did not even have a grand jury hearing before they indicted him or anything like that. It's never been brought up in front of a grand jury, which doesn't surprise me if that's the case.
Well, one thing they said was that pretty much the way I understand it, and I've talked to his family, I met them, and they're lovely, kind, gracious people. But I was standing in front of, you know, them, and one of the things they said was, you know, you can't please the FDA. They tried and tried and tried. It's been going on 5 years, and they did everything, but that the judge pretty much told the jury, this is how it's going to go. You know, this is pretty much how it's going to go as far as they understand. So there's been a lot of things, and, you know, he was denied, whatever, you know, representation. Let me see.
Yeah, they did their normal railroad job, and they tampered with the jury. So I'm assuming they got some kind of a puppet grand jury to indict him in the first place. Maybe they didn't, though. But
something like that. And then they fought him for tampering with a witness, and Samuel doesn't even know what he's done. There was something I read in an article, and it's, you know, and we've talked a little bit about it. In 20 years for like, threatening a grand jury witness or the jury or something like that. And he's like, I don't even know. I don't want anybody to get in trouble. And, you know, so it's like 20 years, up to 20 years maximum sentence. There's you know, just lots of things. Like I say, they come out, he missed a hearing, he didn't understand. So then he was a warrant and he was a fugitive. He didn't understand you have to be at this hearing, you know. And it's just like one thing led to another, and he's in our backyard here, and he's sitting in jail with an indictment, and, you know, one of the things
it sounds like the case is kind of convoluted, that there's a lot of in it, and the only thing, the best advice I can give you is go and try to fill out that paper for a habeas corpus, because it'll get the case, and you can send the docket in the case file so that somebody can read it. And then we can take it to the point of where we file the paper, the habeas corpus. They'll probably default, but we're working. It's going to be better now because it's going to be in the court in our case, and it's going to be documented. So, you know, we're getting to the point of critical mass where they're going to end up having to look at these things. So if he does an affidavit explaining his case, what happened in his own words, you know what I mean? Without coming to any conclusions, just the facts. Like that Sergeant Friday movie. Just the facts, ma'am, nothing but the facts. Put it in there, put it into the habeas corpus, because then we have it in a form that somebody can look at it, and then we can decide what to do with it. I mean, it will get filed as a habeas corpus in the court, you know, and not that they're going to necessarily listen to it, but it's part of the process that we're going to go through to pressure them on these things. And as things, you know, as we move along, and like that one guy said, you know, take the courts down. Well, when the judges and the courts realize that the people are coming up, the president's coming down, the people are coming up, you'll start seeing cracks. They'll want to let things go, that they're not comfortable. That's our hope. You know what I mean? This is a good case because look, they're picking on an older Amish guy. I mean, come on, give me a break. You know?
Yeah, and that's the thing is he's not a criminal, and he's just trying to do good natural products. And this is not about him. It's about freedom of all Americans. This represents all of us.
We got to get Donald Trump to defund the FDA, get rid of them. They're bad. You know, I mean, maybe this is a good case for him to step in on and say, look, this is an example of why I'm going after them. Because they are in our case, the FDA. We did include them because of all the stupid stuff that they do. So they're in there. And I don't know if he can, I don't know who his attorneys are, but, you know, there's not too many attorneys that'll do things that the judge doesn't want them to do because, like Brent says, they hold them in contempt. But if somebody could get maybe an injunction filed, and, you know, because he's putting this in, it probably won't do it, but you never know. It depends on how much pressure they're under. It also depends, everything depends on timing and what's going on at the time that the papers get filed. But rather than do nothing, you should go ahead and fill that out. It's busy work. I mean, it's a lot of work because you gotta sit down and get him to do the affidavit. And then you're probably going to have to put some of the docket stuff in there and send it in so that that our people can look at it. And I don't know where it'll go from there. I mean, we'll definitely, if everything's in order, we'll go ahead and file the habeas corpus. How far that goes, I don't know. But it may be a case that we can draw more attention to, especially if we don't have an FDA, you know, we're going to want to push an FDA case through this, too. This sounds like a good one for us to hang our hat on as far as raising the people's awareness of FDA abuse. And this sounds like a good one because there's, you know, a guy with a bunch of kids and a natural farmer. It's a good story anyway. You know what I'm saying? So
yes.
I don't,
and that's,
I don't,
there's
I don't,
a lot of groups. I'm sorry.
I said, I don't know what kind of traction we'll get, but to me, it sounds like a case that could pick up traction. You know what I mean? Above maybe some other ones, you know?
Alex Jones did play it twice, and there's a retired sheriff, Matt, from Arizona, who came and met them, and they're trying to get awareness because this is a beautiful piece of land. They'll run the family off. You know, it's a good product that he's making, you know, natural things. So, it, like you said, a wonderful little Kentucky Amish farmer who's not a criminal.
See, if you had an NLA contingent over there, that was doing the COS in that town, in that state, and in that town, you could pressure your sheriff. You could say, look, this is your job. This is a federal agency that's coming in after one of our people, and he's doing a good thing. The sheriff could step in and say, you're not taking that guy away. But he's got to have people behind him, and he's got to be a real, you know, he's got to be a real guy. I mean, it's not easy to do. He's got to have support, and he's got to be a constitutionalist, you know, and it's unfortunate
I talked to the sheriff, Gerard, when I talked to them over at the office, they said, oh, this is federal. This is not in our hands anymore. This is all federal. And
a sheriff that says that, you are the top law enforcement, and if you don't know that, you don't deserve to be, and so we're going to be running somebody against you since you don't know how to protect the people. Your job is to protect the people from federal overreach. Sheriff Mack's case proved it, and when he chased the federales out of his state with the Brady Bill. So any sheriff that says this is federal, it's out of our hands, you say, well, guess what? You just gave up your authority. You don't deserve to be sheriff because you obviously don't know the power of the sheriff. You know?
Okay.
This is a good platform to run a new sheriff. I don't know when he's up, but you know what? The fact that he's letting them take this guy should be something that impeaches him from office, because I would file paperwork with the sheriff and with the county saying, look, this guy's not doing his job. How about that? How's that for playing chess?
Mm-hmm. And it's under something that we understood, you know, that the family told me, is that there was a meeting with the U.S. Marshals and the sheriff. This is the family who told me this, and that the sheriff was intimidated and would not stand. So,
Look at this. So. Like Brent says, the sheriffs are run by the marshals because what they do is they get in there and they get these jails that the sheriffs house federal prisoners, and that's where all the sheriff's money comes from. And it brings money into the county, and any sheriff that goes against anything, they cut his funding, and then he's like the bad guy then, right? You know, so if they're getting federal money and housing federal prisoners, the sheriff is they got the guy. They got the sheriff because he's not going to go against them because they'll pull out of the county, and then the county will, you know, I had said that people should go to their counties and enforce resolutions that say that the sheriff should be funded from the tax base before they fund any other office. They need to fund the sheriff's office, and the sheriff should not be getting federal funds from the federal government or the marshals or housing federal prisoners or any of that baloney, because they end up controlling the top law enforcement official, and that's how they do it. It's bribery, and it's extortion, and a bunch of other names, too.
He's out of his – Samuel was removed from Bath County, Owingsville, and put in a Lexington jail. And so then the sheriff's office in Owingsville said, you know, that's out of our hands. So is that the same thing, even though it's a Lexington jail? Is it the same?
The sheriff in the county that it happened could go over to Lexington and say, give me that prisoner. He's got that authority. But the sheriff in Lexington, if he knows the story, he's also culpable. Because if he knows that they got a prisoner in his county that whose constitutional rights were violated, he has a duty also. He's not supposed to let anything in his county that's stepping on the people's rights. So actually, you technically have two sheriffs involved. I mean, look, if they got these guys intimidated, I don't know that this is a long shot, you know, telling you about the sheriff. You know, but, you know, there are some good sheriffs out there if you happen to be in a good county. But what I'm saying is, wouldn't it be nice if you had two sheriffs that understood their job, one from the county where he comes from and the other one where they're housing him, and they both agreed and said, look, we want him out. You know, imagine that. And they don't, if a sheriff stands up like that, the federal government always backs down, because by not backing down, they end up, you know, you're creating a civil war, basically.
Okay.
You know, I mean, not that we want to create a civil war, but the sheriff has the authority, you know, to deputize and stuff. So if they're not ready, you know, like that one sheriff, they said, we're going to come over and arrest you. We're going to bring a SWAT team. He goes, okay, I got my SWAT team. Let's go. You see, it's different than people coming together. The sheriff has a great authority, and he has resources. And if the people in his community love him and work with him, he's a powerful guy. And they're not willing to make that a line in the sand to start the Civil War. At least I don't think they are at this point, because just like Brett says, don't go at them in front. You know, don't square off with them. They're smart enough not to square off with the people in that type of a showdown. You know what I'm saying? They don't want it either. They don't want to square off with us. If they piss enough of us off and square off with us, guess what? They're going to lose. We outnumbered them 700-1. Remember that. If everybody happened to wake up tomorrow, they'd be done. We'd go tar and feather the whole lot of them. But you see, if they rule with fear and coercion.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't know. Look, I'm giving you a pep talk, but, you know, I don't know what you can do with all this, but you need to be in the right mind frame when you're fighting these people, and you got to think outside the box. So I don't know what you can do. I would try to get his affidavit. I would get the habeas corpus file, because that would at least get his story on paper and put it on a docket in a legal fashion, because I guarantee you that everything that he went through, that he did not get anything filed that needed on the record. I'm sure they played with the record. He's probably got nothing really good on the record, because they're very good at quashing the record, and I'm sure they've done the same for him. So filing that habeas corpus and pulling those docket papers in and anything else will go a long way for him to get justice. I mean, even if he has to sit in jail for a little while, it's a first step is all I can tell you, okay?
I appreciate you super much, and you've listened to me, and you've listened to us in Owingsville and in Moorhead, Kentucky. So we thank thank you, and we appreciate you. Okay. Just hearing it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Our prayers will be with you. And him.
Absolutely. All right.
Okay.
And that's with you, too. All right.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right. Okay. I have unmuted. I don't know. This is weird. I got a 203 number, 120 number. Who's this?
Could you hear me okay, Gerard? It's Edward from Connecticut.
Hey, Edward. How you doing? Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, good. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah, I'm over a friend's house there. We're listening in. I wanted to touch base on one thing. But before I mention that, so it's something every time Trump is speaking, he's always talking about the Constitution, and he's always talking about our freedom does not come from government. It comes from God. So it's just great to hear a president say those words.
Well, that's empowering for us, if nothing else, right?
Exactly. Oh, it's incredible because that's what it's all about. I mean, like what John's been saying all along, and with the Bible study and all that, it's all, it's incredible stuff. And the things he said even a month ago about so many things. It's just he's always, sticking with the Constitution. Even today, he spoke on an annual. The president normally speaks on behalf of law enforcement, and he spoke about the sheriffs. It's just incredible.
Look, this country hasn't had leaders in a long time. People are looking for leaders. So he's a leader. And if we can keep him, leading in the right direction, then other leaders will step up to the plate.
Exactly. It'll be a momentum. It'll be the momentum factor. The people are going to get behind him. Like I mentioned last time I spoke to you, I think that as time goes on, more people are going to get behind him, and people will defend him, and it's just, it's just going to snowball in a positive direction. Because even this stuff they tried to pull last week, it's just not sticking. I mean, the people could see through this, and a matter of fact, even some of the talking heads are saying that, the other side, they're just revealing themselves, and they're just doing it so quickly now, so... It's the people just want to get this country back, and they see Trump is trying to do that, and anyone interfering with that, they could see it so clearly. But just one quick thing. Anything on the taxes at all, for property taxes? I mean, because, it's just outrageous what they're doing, It's becoming a percentage of value where there never was a limit on the taxes. You would think when they started that, they would put a limit that it could only be a certain percent of value. But see, there's no limit. It could be 5%. It could be 7%. So think about this. Each year, you're paying, in some cases, 5-7% of value. Now, what other thing you own that you have to pay for it every year of? There's one thing. It was just a nominal fee.
First of all, an at-value tax is unconstitutional. They have no authority to put an at-value tax on every property. They can't give you an at-value. They should not. I shouldn't say they can't. They do, but they should not be able to do an at-value tax of property. Well, they shouldn't be able to tax your property away from you in the first place. But to do it at-value is like a double whammy slap. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's a problem, right? I got my case, but I've held off, and the reason I held off, and I mean, look, it's there's no doubt under the law that land tax on your personal property that you're living on, if you're not a corporation, it should not be able to tax your land. It's ridiculous. Our rights are in this country were couched in property rights. And if you can't own a piece of property without paying tax on it, then you don't own it. And if you don't own the property, then you don't have rights. So by them taking the property and taxing it the way that they do, when you know, unlimitedly, and I mean, even limited taxation, it doesn't matter. Fact is that they shouldn't be able to get their fingers in it in the first place. And if you're not a corporation, a fiction of the state making money using that property, that's the only way they should be able to tax you. And I've read the New York State property, real property tax law, and it talks about, you know, dockage and wharfage and all this stuff. And it's all commercial stuff for a corporation, which is not me. How are they taxing me? So when they tax me and I pay it, what I'm saying is I agree with them, because under law, silence is acquiescence, and they do it. And residential actually means commercial. A resident is somebody who's moving on. In a hospital, a resident isn't a permanent person. He's a doctor that's there practicing that's going to move on. So residential is actually a commercial term that allows them to tax your property because they're listing it as residential. It's like you're a freaking hotel, you know? They don't tell us these things. That legal term actually makes you taxable. Instead of putting it down as private property or whatever, residential is a bad term. No, you're not in a resident. It's your domicile. You know what I'm saying? They play these games, these word games. But just the fact that you know that doesn't mean they're going to stop. I mean, you have to know all this stuff. So all that's in my case. But one of the reasons I haven't filed it is because I'm waiting for our case, the big case, to go in with all this other stuff, because I'm opening up an Article 3 court of record. And that in itself is a battle. So because NLA has this case going in, and it is a case that's filed under common law, Article 3, court of record, I figure, what's the sense of fighting that battle again when I go in? So I'm going to attach my case to the NLA case, and we're only going to fight this battle once. You know, we got to slap the judge. Hey, look, you're a magistrate. You have no authority to do summary judgment like they always want to do, knee-jerk throw you out. You have no standing and all this other baloney. They're going to pull the same stuff with you or me when we come in to fight with our taxes. They're not going to want to hear the case. They're going to look for any other excuse to say that you have no standing, and that's what they do. And that's what we're fighting right now in this Circuit 3 court up here in New York. So once we nail that, then you can start putting your cases in, because once we hash out what the court is and what the people are and who they are and who the judge is, that's the battle, to get into the court and get this court of record, this Article 3 constitutional court, recognize this is what Donald Trump needs to do. This is more important than almost anything else he's doing, is to give us our courts back by recognizing our Article 3 common law court of the people, by the people, with a magistrate and a tribunal who is the jury. It's as simple as that. So that's what I have for you. That's where we're at. And I mean, I'm stalled a little bit until that happens. You know, I mean, I got a couple things to do in the case, but I don't want to file my case until, until we get some more dialogue on this. Anyway, even if it's not decided, because we may want to put more pressure and we may want other people to file their cases in, and that will kind of, and then we'll say, hey, you got to answer this because we're all coming in and you're denying our ability to come in here as the people, you know?
Right. Well, I think you definitely would have Trump's ear, because he did say, I think it was in Jackson, Tennessee, he said that the corrupt judicial system, that was a quote. Yeah, so our president of the United States called our judicial system corrupt. So at least he got a head start on it, Gerard. So he's definitely right. Open.
Right.
Just one quick thing. If some people, you know, are not in a position, unfortunately, to wait too long. Is there anything that they could do to just throw out there and save their motions and then with appeals? You know, like some talking point that could be, because they could easily file, you know, motions to open, and then obviously when it's denied, that they could appeal that. But as long as they have something of some substance to put in, it would then delay that case significantly. And anyone could do that if they're in that position. But if anything you can recommend that they could put in as far as, for example, they could put in some, you know, obviously this is not a proper court, you know, that you're asking or demanding.
Where we went, because they're doing an in rem proceeding, which isn't even, should have nothing to do with our property. An in rem is an admiralty proceeding. It's supposed to be done on a federal level, and it's not supposed to be done against our property, because there's basically in rem says that, you know, it's like you're a pirate ship that they captured or something, the requirements of noticing are like lax, because they don't have to notice because it's stolen property to recovery. That's obviously not the case with us. So we attacked their whole in rem proceeding process, which they didn't want to hear, but that's what they use to steamroll over the people. You know what I mean? Because they don't feel that they have to stop because they're doing this in rem thing. And the problem is yeah, you answer, you can delay it a little bit, you know, which we did. We did go back and forth a little bit, but they have a certain timeline that they're going to go through. And then they don't answer. They just, they put a non-answer and they give you a whole bunch of statutes and they deny you and then they move. And then before you know it, your property is in foreclosure and they're putting it up for tax sale. And so then they tell you, here's what they did in my case. They said, well, you know, if you don't pay the taxes, once this case is decided, the minute the judge's gavel comes down and the taxes aren't paid immediately, see, what they do is they convert the deed to themselves. So it becomes their piece of property. You see, they do an illegal conversion. And so what they said is, well, if you don't pay them, you won't have any standing to sue after the fact, because it'll be our property. We're going to own it. We converted the deed, which is illegal, by the way. So then you move heaven and earth and you get the money and you pay the taxes, right? So what I heard was, then the federal judge says, well, then what they did was they said, we're dismissing the suit because the taxes are paid and the point is moot. First they say, if you don't pay the taxes, you'll have no standing. And then you pay the taxes, they say, well, the case is over because you paid the taxes.
That's what we're fighting now.
Yeah. So if you know these little tricks that they're going to pull, maybe you can think outside the box and get around them. I mean, I'm giving you my best stuff that I got from my own school of hard knock experience. You know, it's not easy. You got to write papers. You got to tangle the judge up and all this stuff. Yeah. And look, we gave the judge a writ of error that he should be embarrassed when the federal judge reads it. I don't think he's going to want to stick his neck out for this guy. You got to get it out. You got to take it up to the federal court. Of course, like we know, they're all corrupt too. However, you got to create a situation where they understand that you're not going to go away, and that federal judge, you're going to put him on the line. And you got to become like a porcupine where you're more trouble than you're worth. So he gets on the phone and calls down to the county and say, look, I don't want this case. You know what I mean? Get it out of my court. Settle with this guy. You know what I'm saying? That's the only way you're going to win it, because you got to make enough trouble that he understands that you're going to hold him to. I mean, they got fraud and RICO and everything else they're doing in these counties. When my property went up for tax sale, there was 500 and something other people, and they put us all in the same index number. What the heck is that all about? So when I filled out our paperwork, we put that number in, and we said, and the 500 other people, because an answer for one is an answer for all. Well, they went crazy. They want to hear that. I said, well, wait, I didn't tell you to put it all on the same docket number. How can we all have the same docket number? What are you talking about? But that's what they do because they got some kind of fugazi in-rem procedure that allows them to buzz. You see, they're taking their lead from the banks that are stealing the mortgages, and they don't even really know what they're doing. They're just doing it because people don't stand up to them, and they never take, they never hold their feet. This whole thing, I am positive it's illegal and unconstitutional, and it's RICO. And they got people writing this stuff that don't even understand. Like, you follow the federal rules for NREM, and it says that the property needs to be arrested by a federal officer. An NREM procedure is not a state county procedure. It should be run in federal court if you're going to do it at all. And where is the federal officer that arrests the property that shows the fiduciary that shows the lien and the fiduciary responsibility, the claim? Where is it? It's not there. And so those are the things that you have to raise when you go into court, because they can't answer that. All right?
Yeah, in Connecticut, you know, we are able to push it, to buy time with various motions. And then, of course, when they're denied, we could then take it to the appellate court, and that ties it up. Could be 6 months, 9 months there. But it sounds that, you know, the best thing at some point is to get it to federal. I guess if they're denying your...
What's that? I think I lost. I think his call got dropped. I think we lost Ed. I don't see him there. Well, it's 12 o'clock. Maybe that's what we got to cut off here. I don't know. Everything went dead. I don't hear nothing from nobody. Can you hear me, Robert? Am I still on? Anybody?
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, we must have just dropped the call. I don't know. But look, it's 12 o'clock, 12:01. I'm gonna cut it. I'm going to go ahead and go.
It's that time.
Yeah, it is. I didn't realize it was 12 already, and I'm so glad we got long-winded. I'm sorry. But we'll pick it up. Remember your questions. Write them in. We'll discuss them next week or whatever. Lots of good stuff tonight. And thank you, everybody, for coming out. And God bless. And we'll be in touch. Thanks.